I'm sure most of you know that YouTube has given Steven Crowder a warning, which is like it's a warning. They don't shut you down, but they take your content down. They then gave him a strike. They then gave him another warning on his other channel, Crowder Bits. They then gave him a second strike on his main channel, and then they gave him a strike on a second channel. This is serious. And for anybody listening who's not familiar, Crowder is a massive personality. He's a conservative comedian. He does news commentary, cultural commentary. And for the longest time, we saw censorship happening. It was targeting the fringes, so many people said. But as you can see, as time goes on, the fringe keeps changing. The hit pieces keep coming, and they just keep coming for the next person, closer and closer towards, you know, the center, and then eventually everyone gets censored. We even see many anti-war leftists getting censored as well. Well, Crowder is fighting back, filing a lawsuit, or at least he's announcing he will be filing a lawsuit and an injunction against YouTube. And it's really interesting. We're going to go through what they're talking about, why they're doing it. I think this is extremely important because, well, once Crowder goes, then who's next on the chopping block? Channels like ours. See, before they started going after Crowder, they were going after other channels as well, people like Alex Jones. And we all knew it was only a matter of time before they would make their move and slowly just get rid of more and more content creators, more and more channels. So we definitely need to talk about this and make sure we're keeping this at the forefront because this is going to be really, really important. And I'll say it too, you know, we obviously want Crowder to be able to continue doing his work. And there's also a bit of self-preservation in there. I know what happens to us the moment Crowder's out of the picture. They're going to keep moving down the line. We can't have that happen. So we'll talk about that. We got a bunch of other news too. There's a huge Supreme Court decision. 9-0. Like even the liberal justices agreed. Cops can't use caretaking as an excuse to go in your house and take your guns without a warrant. So we'll get into that. We also got police reform in the Minneapolis area. The Black Lives Matter activists have won. And now they're going to be creating an unarmed traffic enforcement division, which I can only assume will be like, I want to say like a Benny Hill movie, but with more violence and injury. And it really does worry me. So we're going to get into this. And joining us today is the digital editor from Recoil Magazine, Forrest Cooper. Thanks for hanging out, man.
Hey, Tim.
Do you want to just give a quick introduction for?
Yeah, no, I'll do that. My name is Forrest Cooper.
What are you wearing?
I am showing off some of the stuff that we work on in our magazine. But now for reality.
I told him to wear it, everybody.
He did. It was forced.
You had it. Yeah, I was like, hey, put that on.
Yeah, put that on.
Night vision goggles.
Yeah, night vision, right? So it's that kind of, if you want to understand a little bit about Recoil Magazine, we like to be edgy in that fashion. Looking at new products, what's really coming out. So instead of it just being about whether a firearm, you know, how evaluating a firearm, we talk about culture, we talk about night vision, how to do it. And so it's really about education and aspiration.
Gun stuff.
Yep. The core idea being culture leads policy. You change culture by going out and doing stuff.
Speaking of Steven Crowder, the other day on Saturday, I went and actually, I finally got the SIG M400 that Crowder had sent to me. Thank you very much, Steven. And we took it out to the range in West Virginia. And everyone was super impressed with it. So we had a great time. So, you know, Forrest and I and a few others went out and we fired a bunch of guns. And we also brought out the Barrett M82A1 and tried to blow up the gong, but we weren't able to do it. But it was fun firing that. So that's what we did yesterday.
Yep.
And again, the weapon from Crowder was incredible. Everybody was super impressed with it. I was super impressed with it. Really grateful for getting that. So again, we're going to talk about the censorship stuff. We got Ian East chilling.
What's up, everybody? Ian Crossland. Good to be here.
You got me in the corner pushing buttons. I'm Sarah Patch Lids.
Before we get started with the show, go to timcast.com, click the big members only button, and you can sign up to become a member. You can do it through Stripe or PayPal. See, we're building up the site. We're making it better because we know many people have asked. But this site exists because the fear of censorship was very real. And I realized if I didn't start setting something up that would exist outside of YouTube, I got all my eggs in one basket. And, you know, we can get banned the same as Crowder can. So just like Crowder has the Mug Club, which you guys should definitely check out and support him considering what they're going through and how important this lawsuit is, we have timcast.com where you can join us as well. And when you do, you get access to the members area, a ton of exclusive members-only podcast segments and full episodes. It's really, really great. We were hanging out with Robbie Starbuck last week talking about neocon rhinos threatening to quit the Republican Party. And he made a really good point that the tumor is excising itself. Oh, we're so upset about it. So definitely become a member. Just be there because in the event that we get a strike, look, even one strike, if we say something wrong any moment, we don't know what, we can't produce any content on any channel for a week. Same thing is happening to Crowder right now. They got him out for 2 weeks. So in the event that happens, you can find us at timcast.com. But don't forget to like, share, subscribe, hit that notification bell if you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. Give us a good review and, you know, take the URL on YouTube and share it around. It really, really does help, especially considering this is the big fight, everybody. Let's talk about this first story right here. LouderWithCrowder.com officially suing YouTube. Steven Crowder initiates legal action against YouTube. From Crowder's website, they report last week, Louder with Crowder LLC, through its lawyer, gave a legal notice to YouTube of the intent to file a lawsuit and seek an injunction. They go on to mention they have a video available on their website. Last fall, after the Vox adpocalypse, YouTube remonetized Crowder's channel. They said, "We had a record-breaking election live stream in November and incredibly successful streams thereafter. If there ever was a target painted on our backs, it was then. Once we hit the new year and a new president ascended, the landscape of social media shifted in favor of the left. Democrats took control of the presidency and now have control of both houses of Congress. As such, YouTube and other big tech platforms feel emboldened with very few lawmakers standing in the way." He says, "In 2021, YouTube hit them with a warning of a strike over election content, then issued the first hard strike. The first strike was related to a COVID policy in their March 18th video of the one-year anniversary of 15 days to flatten the curve. The studio is familiar with YouTube's policies on COVID." So I'll just give you the gist of it. And I went over this the first time they gave him a strike. Crowder did not break any rules in this capacity. And I got really angry because I get this email from Google when this is going down, like well in advance of any of the censorship, straight up saying, "Here are the exact conditions you must meet to violate this policy." And I said, "That's easy." They said, "You can't say two specific things together," which obviously I can't say because YouTube will take us down if I do, even if I explain it. That's the way this works. Their algorithms don't understand the difference between explaining something and it's all the same to them. Crowder never said that there was widespread fraud. Crowder never mentioned about, you know, anything about overturning or anything like that. They gave him a strike, which is bunk. The next one, the second one, is the craziest. Apparently, they're claiming that Crowder and his team were glorifying the death of Micaiah Bryant for agreeing with the police, that the police officers were justified in the shooting. Now, of course, Media Matter says that they were mocking, you know, the woman. I don't see that as still violating the policies, which says, you know, glorifying or reveling in someone's death. When you're like, "Hey, this is the law. If you break it, this is what's going to happen," I think YouTube is reaching. As Crowder explains, he says the concern they have is that YouTube is actively looking for violations in their past videos that aren't actually violations in order to issue a third hard strike once they're allowed to stream to the platform, which would deplatform them from YouTube. YouTube has a pattern of applying policies and even stretching those policies beyond any reasonable reading of the policy in order to harm channels which take a contrary view of their opinions. We experienced this. We only ever gotten a warning, but it was on our episode with Alex Jones, and they claimed that a hyperbolic statement was glorifying violence or something, and they took the full podcast down. And I said it was a half a second. Can I just snip it out? And they're like, "No." They were looking for any possible excuse to take our video down. And I think that's pretty obvious to everybody. So he goes on to mention why you should care. No matter what side of the political aisle you're on, YouTube isn't encouraging debate. It's trying to squash debate, trying to eradicate ideas from its platform it simply does not like. One day those ideas are about the election. Then they're about COVID. Now those ideas include applauding an officer for saving a woman's life. When will enough be enough? Well, this is really important, but I got to say to Steven and crew, obviously we all care. I think the people who watch this show care about principle and recognize the commie is going to have their free speech. The Nazi is going to have their free speech, and we're going to be annoyed with them, but we're going to argue. And that's the purpose of free speech. We want our rights protected. And that means people you don't like, they get rights too. The problem is the people we're up against, I hate to call it left and right because it really doesn't make sense economically or even in terms of tradition versus progressivism. It's just zealots who want power, whose ideology is there is no truth but power, and then people who are like, "Let's have a fair debate, a fair argument over this." So they're suing. They're filing an injunction. And I wonder what precedent could be set. There's a lot of people need to understand, like when we watch James O'Keefe filing these lawsuits against the New York Times and CNN, a lot of people say you can't do it. You can't do it for this, that, and this reason. Oh, it's going to get thrown out. You can only do it until you do it. if you keep backing down and saying, there's no point in suing because what's going to happen? It's going to be a waste of money. Okay, listen, I understand if you don't have the money to file a lawsuit, that's a challenge. But if you just sit there and let these companies do this, there will never be precedent set. So I'll throw it to you guys. Otherwise, I'm going to keep ranting on the censorship. Ian, obviously, you were talking about just before the show creating terms of service for mines because you helped put that together.
Yeah, honestly, in addition to it being up against, you know, like you said, zealots, people that are just like kind of crazy about political correctness and stuff. We're also up against centralization of power and machine learning algorithms that aren't necessarily, and we're seeing the flaws in the system of a centralized service that's dictating what can and can't be said through a machine algorithm because stuff gets taken out of context. Like you said, you can't explain certain things even though you're not using it derogatorily.
Because the voice to text thing they do for captions would just show the sentence. It doesn't understand. I'm like, here's exactly what YouTube said I can't say. They'd be like, we see it in the code. Gone.
Yeah.
You see this also in like the firearms industry or the gun world. So there's gun tubers, people who make YouTube videos. You could say Grantham's a big one. Warrior Poet Society's a good one.
Hickok 45.
Hickok.
He's great.
He's classic.
I love that.
So, but I mean, you can. The firearms industry actually, in some ways, not the industry, but the community, because culture as well, was somewhat saved by the internet because it allowed people from rural areas, because a lot of more firearms ownership in rural areas, communicate with one another. And then they started making YouTube channels so that people could learn how to do things. And it is ironically controversial in the United States right now. I don't want to use ironically too heavy because it's way too hipster. But
like
it's
you. Yeah. You're right, though.
Yeah, right. No, but it's ironically controversial that a person can have their page taken down because they were teaching somebody how to not hurt themselves.
Do you remember when Google banned the word gun?
Yes.
This was the best thing because so you couldn't search for the word or any combination of the three letters G-U-N.
Yep.
So I searched for the anime Gundam.
Yep.
It wouldn't come up. You couldn't buy Japanese action figures. That's how stupid their censorship is.
Yeah, like my personal Instagram is @FoxRowOfficial, and my search page is all Gundams with like and motorcycles. Because it's like you look at my page, I've got guns and motorcycles, but my search history, if you look at the search page, it's all anime.
Gundam.
It's all anime characters.
Why, like, are you searching for that? It's just defaulting it?
Well, I mean, I did play Final Fantasy VII once.
Great game.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, right?
Great game.
One of the best.
Yeah. The remake was good. I
enjoyed the remake.
Yeah.
But that's exceptional music. Story.
Anyway, Google only like a lot of people were. So we went to the range yesterday. We're filming the vlog, and we fired the Barrett. M82A1.
That's the kind of nomenclature that people use. Yeah,
and 50 BMG and Crowder gave he sent me a year ago a Sig M400, and I also got a Sig Tred Sight, and it was amazing. It was just really really great, and we did it all safe. I mean, Forrest, you clearly know how to shoot. We're giving instruction. We also had the instructor on site. And a lot of people were just like, I got asked like 10 times, are you sure you can do this? Mm-hmm. Like, YouTube will delete your vlog, won't it? And I'm like, I went through the rules. They say as long as you're showing the weapon and shooting it in a range. I mean, obviously, there are YouTubers who are still producing. But I don't know. Maybe we'll get the channel demonetized.
Yeah, I mean, there's different types of content you can see people creating. Either it's just like short films. People do that with all the time, usually with airsoft guns, but you get the point. But they also do how to disassemble a firearm so you can clean it. So when your channel, your video gets demonetized because you're teaching somebody how to safely clean their firearm, you're getting dinged with something that says you're teaching someone
how to assemble,
right? which is one of those things where like the people who are running the asylum are not the right people, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's contradictory. Mm-hmm. When it's you're watching people perform gun safety, and so they punish you for it.
Yes.
So one of the things they said is that you can only show a weapon in an appropriate place, like a gun store or a range. Mm-hmm. You can't just have one in like an office room or something. I guess they'll give you a strike.
Sure.
You could. So there's a local range out here, and they have rooms that look just like classrooms because they do safety trainings. Yeah, you can't do that.
No, absolutely.
They'll be like, oh, that's not, you know.
It looks too much like this, so we'll take it.
It looks like a school.
It could be, yeah.
And then you're going to get in trouble. You're going to get dinged. You're going to get censored. Mm-hmm. And therein lies the big problem. I love how you said it was ironic because America is a gun country, and these massive services, namely YouTube, will ban your content And I have to wonder too. There's definitely an overlap here. Obviously, you know, Crowder is usually he got. I think he's, what is he? What does he have? The Walther on his on his desk.
He's got a Walther. Yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I wonder, I've always been curious about that. I'm like, dude's got a gun sitting on his desk, or he's got his holsters.
Yep.
And I'm just like, I'm pretty sure there's some, you know, Democrat anti-gun person sitting at YouTube HQ in Silicon Valley with their finger over the ban button, just like, you stupid gun, moron gun, I don't ban you. And then they're just waiting. They're waiting. Like Crowder said, they're looking for something to get him for.
Yeah, and I think that's the part where you establish intent. Like, it is not really about honest disagreement. We're looking at intent now.
But the bigger question is, and I'm glad Crowder is filing legal action. This is a good thing because, like I said, you've got to sue and then make that argument. But they can ban whoever they want whenever they want, right, Ian?
According to most terms, I haven't read the YouTube terms. I know Twitter says we can ban you at any time for any or no reason. That's intentional.
So it's interesting now that we as individuals who operate on these platforms have no legal protections. And it's interesting. Maybe we shouldn't. Maybe it's our own fault. That's why I set up, you know, timcast.com, because I'm like, okay. I mean, I'm fairly libertarian. If YouTube's got a company, they don't owe me anything, and it's their platform. If somebody came into my house and started, you know, like throwing food on the floor, I'd be like, get out. Someone came into my house, started screaming a bunch of Nazi stuff, I'd be like, dude, get out. Not going to be having that. The difference is YouTube has been subsidized by Google. They've monopolized the space. There are platforms where you can upload videos, but YouTube is absolutely dominated. And now it's kind of the only place where you can run a business. It's a really, really complicated argument. No other service offers monetization in the same way that YouTube does. And so what's this?
Or do they? Recoil is currently building, and we have Recoil TV, which functions similar to YouTube, and we are building a monetization path.
It's expensive to host these videos, though.
We have it. So if you are a firearms if you're a firearms content creator, get a hold of us because we'll put you on Recoil TV. It doesn't cost you anything.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
But how, you guys got to fund that, run ads or something, or
we fund it through the fact right that on. People like our publication.
There you go.
Really.
But it can get really, really expensive. So for instance, in the members only section of our website, we have to pay for that bandwidth, and it is a lot. Like it gets up to tens of thousands of dollars. People don't realize this. YouTube's free. So we broadcast right now on YouTube. You know, we get 40K concurrent views, you know, on average during the election. We had like 140 or some on one podcast. That means for the 2 to 3 megabits up we're sending out 140,000 times two megabits. All of that data YouTube's paying for.
Yep.
And then they take a small percentage of super chats. They take a percentage of, you know, advertisements. So the issue is they're fronting the cost for all of these things. Should we be entitled to the service? And that's where things get challenging. And man, I'm pretty much on the fence, but so long as I'm on the fence in terms of like their business, private company, but where I draw the line is if they've monopolized public discourse, if they have grown to the size to where they're influencing elections, now I think it's a public service. And that's interestingly a more liberal argument conservatives never used to have. And I'm like, I think that they've grown and taken over the commons. We don't have town hall discourse anymore. People are coming to this show and hearing arguments and discussions and commenting. YouTube's effectively dominated the space. Well, now they owe public discourse, in which case I think it's extremely dangerous if they're going to start removing people who are setting up who are setting up their businesses. Maybe a better way to put it is if a private company bought all of the available business space in downtown, yeah, at a certain point, people are going to be like, okay, fine, you can own it, but you can't ban people for selling a product you don't like. Like, people can pay you rent, you can set up terms for the property, but we need commerce to exist. Crowder needs to be able to speak. We need to be able to have reasonable discourse. And what the problem I see with this is that massive multinational corporations, if they see YouTube get away with this, they can just start to dominate whatever public space they want, whatever area of the commons they want, and then just say, but it's a private company, it's ours now. Shut everybody out. And then, I don't know, what, people get violent?
Well, on the forefront of that, you're also looking at what is the intent. Again, you think about it in the sense of we could talk about guns, we can talk about anything political, even with Steven Crowder. Do they not want him to be heard, or do they not trust him as a as a good faith actor is a good question, right?
Well, I think if you look at the left faction tends to be, in my opinion, a there is no truth but power faction.
Yep.
They accuse the right of being that, and it's really insane that perhaps many of the establishment Republicans, for sure, but when we're looking at anti-critical race theory individuals and their alignment on the right, these are the people who reject that ethos. And so, quite literally, you have the left lying and accusing the right of what it's doing itself, which creates a serious problem. Do they think Crowder is a bad faith actor? No, I think they believe Crowder is truthful.
And they don't like it.
Right, because they're bad faith actors who are trying.
They're angry by his success.
There are a lot of leftists, a lot, mm-hmm. maybe the majority, who are good faith, mm-hmm. but they're following the bad faith Pied Piper, believing sure. they're, you know, following the truth. And then they say the same thing about Trump and Trump's diehard fans. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, but that's not the majority of whatever this faction is.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who are like begrudgingly voting for Trump, you know, and then you have a lot of people on the left who begrudgingly voted for Biden. So it's interesting, but in the end, people like the, you know, in the intellectual dark web, disaffected liberals, moderates have more in common with conservatives based on moral frameworks and rejection of critical race theory and left identitarianism, believing in free speech, than the establishment Democrats. And there's a big difference between voting for Trump and voting for Biden. You vote for Trump because he's a human Molotov cocktail or because you really like him and his policies. People vote for Biden because he's a feeble old man they think they can overtake and steal power, or they genuinely like his policies. But I believe that was probably like a tiny faction. Most of the people voted for him because they hated Trump.
Yeah.
Based on that, you cannot build a government. So.
Yeah. What, a house divided against itself?
Yep.
So
I know most people have more in common than they realize, I think. That's Occupy Wall Street showed that when people were railing against the Federal Reserve and like the monetary system kind of putting us all against each other.
Mm-hmm. Hey, to stop that.
It's so sad when people get confused and start to go at each other like this. I don't like it.
Yeah, the no truth but power argument is a great form of sort of moral cynicism, but it also, it's very manipulative. It's not a very, well, first of all, it's very honest because the people who say it are only interested in power. So at least they're consistent in that sense. But it says
rest in power.
There is no truth but power, which is how I'm going to use that philosophy to take your power and give it to me. It's not the statement there. No truth but power is not complete. It's only the first half. It's there is no truth but power, and I deserve it.
You know, it's interesting because there is. I understand what they're saying when they say that.
Mm-hmm.
That what's the point of having an argument with you if they want to create their own system, their own utopia, their own leftists, mm-hmm. you know, perfect world? There's no point having an argument with a bunch of people who disagree with them.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to take your power away, destroy your system, and then build a new one.
Mm-hmm.
So for the time being, I don't think the core of their philosophy is there's no truth but power. It's in order for me to build my utopia, I must seize all of your power and the truth be damned. And that's where we're at right now. And it leads to some very interesting things, which is our next segment here, actually. So, Forrest, you're based out of Minneapolis.
I live in Minneapolis for the time being.
For the time being. And you've got to see a lot of what's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
We got the story from the Star Tribune. Here we go. Brooklyn Center passes police reform package. Bravo. Black Lives Matter. They've won this one.
Yep.
The failed leadership of Brooklyn Center has caved. One of the things they're going to be doing. An unarmed civilian traffic enforcement division. Okay. Here's my favorite thing. Civilian.
Mm-hmm.
Are police civilians?
Technically, yes. Technically, no. I'm not going to be able to answer that one because I think you could make the argument in many ways that they're functionally neither right now.
Functionally neither.
They're functionally neither because, I mean, sure, they're not citizens. In the sense that they work for the government. That's, mm-hmm. Where do we make that distinction either is another question. Because I think that's a very modern way of thinking.
Yeah.
Because a soldier is not considered a citizen, but he's still a citizen of the country.
You mean civilian?
He's not considered a civilian, yeah. So they.
But they're citizens.
They're citizens.
Civilian.
Yeah, sorry about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they're you know, combatants. They're armed forces.
Mm-hmm.
They're,
mm-hmm. So conventionally, the answer is no.
But I would say that if you're talking from a military perspective, the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going in foreign war. They're literally living in a small town and dealing with local domestic law.
Mm-hmm.
They're civilians.
So the line gets blurred because you have when you talk about the police, you're talking about a very large swath of people.
Right.
You've got your small town sheriff, and you've got CIA, you've got FBI, you've got BORTAC, you've got people who look much more militant. Most people don't see them. And are they both considered the police?
Well, so let's get into meat and potatoes here.
Mm-hmm.
They've successfully reformed their police, and it's beyond what I would consider, because I've said we need reform, but I'm usually talking about creating more divisions, like an unarmed traffic enforcement. Okay, well, maybe if the idea is like you see someone commit a traffic violation, you write down their license plate and they mail them a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
That's something they've been talking about doing. But what do you think would happen if someone, you know, an unarmed civilian tries pulling over? Let's say there's a guy,
mm-hmm.
and maybe he was at a party,
mm-hmm.
and he wakes up and he's got a gun, mm-hmm. and he goes to one of the people who lives there,
mm-hmm.
and then he says, "Give me all your money," and then shows that he's got a gun. Let's say that's the person, and now this person is wanted for that crime, which is a felony.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they're driving, and the unarmed person pulls them over, by whatever means the division is able to do it. The lights turn on, I guess they mm-hmm. have some kind of car, and they get out.
It's another morning, and you're all set for work. You grab your coffee, head out the door, and your car decides today's the day it won't start. Panic sets in. You're not just late, you're stranded. Get ahead of unexpected car repairs before they strike with CarShield, the most trusted vehicle protection company. For almost 20 years, CarShield has saved millions of drivers from repair nightmares with low monthly plans that cover up to 5,000 major parts and systems, like pricey transmission and engine repairs, and check engine light mysteries. Visit CarShield today at carshield.com/Carlson. Plans include unlimited miles, 24/7 roadside assistance, help with flats, lockouts, and rental car options. Save 20% and get a free quote by visiting CarShield online at carshield.com/Carlson. Don't wait for the next surprise. Choose peace of mind with CarShield. Go to carshield.com/Carlson and save 20% today.
What do you think happens to a person in a situation like this?
You do have a disparity of power, and you also have a disparity of the duty. So is it the duty of the unarmed civilian to pull somebody over, or is it just a privilege of their position? Right. So,
please stop.
Yeah, I mean,
you're
powerless to employ it, but is there the burden, the onus of the state on you to go do it? Do you have a quota? Oh, well, there's more people drunk driving in our neighborhood right now. Yeah, there are. They're all armed, and I'm not. Right? You know, like, what are you going to do?
Quotas are bad. You know
it's the bureaucratic problem.
I feel like this is the opening the door to defund the police completely. And it's kind of funny, too, because one of the ways police get funding is through tickets. And I'm not a fan, especially when they do quotas.
Yeah.
So now it's like they're being defunded by taking away their ability to issue traffic violations.
I think it can be seen as a lot more sinister, too. So you take your example earlier. They see you commit a violation, or they put up traffic cameras and they see you run a red light. Then they send a ticket to your house, which you cannot fight. Or if you try to fight it, it's going to cost you time and money. So you just sort of now have to pay it. But most people do. But if you don't, then they send armed people with guns to your house. Now you have a position of creating that pipeline of going from, I don't like you, I write you a ticket for something that could be bogus, could be legitimate, it goes to your house, knowing that you're not going to pay it, and then we're starting to...
Now they can search your house.
Now they can search your house, now they can seize your property. This is called, this is already in effect in London.
Wow.
Right? You go to London, you run a red light, you park in the wrong place, you will have a ticket sent to your house and you can't fight it. Well, you can't.
And then if you don't pay it, the cops show up and now you've got some kind of crime. They can
mm-hmm.
let us in.
It creates a paper trail. It's crime by bureaucracy, not crime.
Now, if they pull you over while you're driving, you get a ticket and don't pay it, they can still go to your house and arrest you and go into your house.
Yes. But there was somebody there to witness it. That is the purpose of American policing, right. Is that a person has to do it.
I think, though, in the end, this would increase the likelihood of these, because I once got in the mail two tickets
mm-hmm.
from Chicago. Final determination, they said. And I was like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
I had gotten two parking tickets for parking outside of my dad's place in Chicago, but I had a permit. I had a parking permit. I guess a cop, somebody wrote me two tickets, never put them on my car. I never got notice of them until it was a final determination. And so when I got it, I called and said, what is this? I have a permit to park where I did. And they were like, sir, it's too late. You lost your chance to fight the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine you get pulled over. All right, you get pulled over, you get a ticket, you don't pay it. They can eventually come to your house maybe to serve a warrant for failure to appear or something like that. But let's say you never even knew you did anything wrong. Let's say you didn't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. Let's say you were driving right and one of these unarmed people was just like, eh, he blew a stop sign as far as I'm concerned. You get a ticket in the mail. You never realize it came in the mail. You're like, I don't know what these are. You throw it in the trash. Then one day they show up at your house and you're like, what's happening? When there's an interaction between you and the officer, I think there's, you know, a likelihood you're going to be aware of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
This will probably increase the likelihood cops start showing up to people's homes. And I can only imagine that would maintain the same ratio of violent encounters.
It's not going to get better, that's for sure. I mean, it's not. It's because now you're going to take the cultural perception of the police as a threat in certain areas, and you're going to cross that. You're going to paint that across the whole population, right?
But apparently, I was reading this, and they are going to pull people over.
Yes.
So I can only imagine that the people are going to be like, you get pulled over, and a guy walks up in like a polo and khakis, and he's like, "Excuse me, sir, you are speeding. I'm supposed to write you a. Who are you? You a cop? No, sir. I'm not a cop. Later."
Yeah.
Or what obligation do I have to stop for someone who's not a cop?
I mean, are you just going to look back in your mirror and say it's a red and yellow light, not a red and blue light, so I might as well just drive home? Oh, yeah. I live in a gated community. You're not allowed in here. So if you come in here, I'm going to call the actual cops to tell you to not come in.
I think it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
These people go around like smashing up windows, starting fires. We saw what happened right now in Minneapolis. They're people are freaking out. They're demanding more cops. They're increasing the budgets. And then this one town, Brooklyn Center, which is like north, just like basically due north, all of a sudden they're like, we're going to do the opposite. We're just going to carte blanche.
Yeah, I mean, Brooklyn Center is going to get eaten by Minneapolis. It's going to get folded in.
I mean, has that happened recently? Is it? Because
folded in? Like, it's within the counties. Brooklyn Center is essentially Minneapolis.
So what's it like living in Minneapolis? Is it the apocalyptic wasteland we all believe it is because we watch nothing but internet videos?
It's not completely the apocalyptic wasteland. It's not the
but it is basically Kabul.
It's closer to
Mosul.
It feels a lot more like being in Kandahar than it does like being in America.
And but do you mean that for real? Like,
yeah, I mean it's not quite the same. I'm not driving an armored vehicle around, but there are definitely like we have new SOP standard operating procedures amongst us and our friends and our family. Like
you actually served though. You were.
Yeah, I was in the military for a while.
So just because there's probably a lot of people like, he has no idea what he's talking about, Minneapolis. And, yeah. Like, no, you're actually...
No, I have had the privilege of being in the armed forces for a while. It was a great time.
What did you do in the military?
I was a Ranger, Army Ranger. Mm-hmm. Right. So it was a great time.
So now being back home and... It's like, what, similar?
It's not
as bad.
Yeah, right? I mean, no one's burning tires to block the roadways for 3 months of the year.
You know? There's an autonomous zone where they're like...
We do have an autonomous zone,
barricades
though, yep.
And threaten people with violence.
So in the same way, there are places that we just don't go. Like, there are roads you don't take.
No-go zones.
There's definitely, like... Hey, we communicate, my family, we communicate, and it's like, hey, I'm going to go get groceries. Okay, cool. I mean, that's kind of normal for some people, but we're definitely more conscious about what we're looking at, what threats we're looking for, what kind of concerns we have. And then we have a little network of people that are all friends and families in the Twin Cities that we're all looking out for each other.
Is this new? Like, this behaviors and these defensive tactics?
It absolutely initiated last year when the riot started. We spontaneously set it up. We just called all the people that we knew. We built a kind of a network through social media conversation or through Signal or through text messages, and we established ways that we talked to each other so that we could very effectively verify rumors. So one of the worst things that happened during the riots last year, not this year, was essentially the entirety of social media became an advertisement for things that aren't happening. The white supremacists are coming down from New Brighton. These people are coming from here. We just saw this thing happen. And it was like everyone was on so high alert that they were spreading rumors so quickly, which added to the fervor. It added to the terror in the sense. And so one of the things that we had to do as a community is by our own volition, by our own choice, verify information ourselves. So, okay, if someone's saying that this is on fire or they're moving towards one of the concerns that they had last year was if the police provide a strong enough presence in defending a precinct, or they harden targets in like, when they mean harden target, like make it difficult for people to loot and riot in certain areas, they're going to move into the residential areas.
Right.
So the moment we heard that, it was like, okay, how can we verify that information? Because that sounds a lot like hearsay, but it also has a big threat.
So you're basically creating like a neighborhood watch. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I mean it's a neighborhood watch.
Unofficial. It's like, you know, you have chat group. Remember when I was talking about this maybe like a week or two ago, when I said what's going to start happening is there's more violence. You'll see the formation of like local community groups.
That's exactly what
they'll
it is.
Start texting each other. Hey, I heard this. Are you all right? Text. You know, there'll be text groups.
Yep.
And it's going to escalate from there.
Yeah, and we took it a step further of having triggers and conditions. Or conditions and appropriate responses. So, like, in the event that X happens, we do Y, right? In the event that we see this happen, so, like, if the protest goes to this precinct, we go to this person's house and get their wife and child out.
Wow.
And move them out of the city, put them into a safe house. And we did that. We had to do exactly that.
You mentioned earlier, you said, for the time being, so you're getting out, aren't you?
Yeah. We're looking at moving out of state. Our families are there, but... There's not a lot of reason to live in Minneapolis right now. It does not look like a bright future.
Everybody's going to Texas, I guess.
Texas is a big one. Yeah.
It's kind of crazy when you mention like these streets you don't go down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a new thing since the start of the riots. That's why I asked you.
Yeah, I mean, the term Minnesota nice is not entirely pejorative. It also does mean that, like, generally speaking, you can drive through most of the city and not be in actual fear for your life. But when I go to a place and I see a roadblock with armed people that just by looking at them know that they have no idea what they're doing with that firearm, given it's their right to have it, but I know that they don't know what they're doing with it, I'm not going to put myself in the position of no reward and all risk.
I want to show you guys this post I found on Reddit. So I'm browsing Reddit and political humor. Okay, if you go on Reddit and you click all, mm-hmm. you'll see every post. It is a hive of scum and villainy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of people who are really dumb. They don't do research. It's very tribal. Political humor. This was one of the front page posts. It says radical left. It shows a photo from the Capitol and says, it cracks me up when the left is referred to as radical, as if the left is running around carrying assault rifles, denying science, and discussing not accepting the election results. And I'm like, does any of these people have the internet 4 years ago? Like four years? Did they use the internet? First of all, okay, fair point. No one is running around with assault rifles. That's just stupid.
Nope.
No one. Not anyone. I mean, it'd be kind of a crazy thing to see a guy running around with like an actual M16 or maybe even like a legit belt-fed machine gun of some sort. But no, no one's doing that. I think they just mean rifle in general. Okay. Well, the left is doing that like 100 times more often than the right does it. They've been denying science and the election for 4 years. But these people... They live in a bubble.
Yep.
I think it's funny. I wanted to bring this up because you're mentioning Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. You know, you live there. And I'm like, I was reading a story where it was like 30 gunshots ring out at like 10 p.m. And then it's like by 11 p.m. another 30 gunshots ring out. A guy's on a rooftop. They say, Star Tribune, I think it was an op-ed. They say a guy on a rooftop with an assault rifle. And I'm like, it's probably just a regular rifle, but I get your point. There's a guy on a roof with a gun.
I've seen the picture, and I know where the gunshots happen because, yeah.
What's going on in the autonomous zone?
So in the autonomous zone, from what I understand, and this is going to be a combination of it's a difficult piece to explain entirely, but what you have is essentially people thinking that the cops are going to come in and raid their buildings. So you'll have, like, the picture that we're talking about was classically a guy on a rooftop with an AR-15 style rifle sitting up there like he's providing overwatch for the city, right? Or for the neighborhood. So in case a police officer or the police come down or whatever, maybe it's some...
Wait, this guy wanted to shoot cops?
I'm not going to ascribe that. I can't tell you what he wanted, but maybe he was genuinely afraid for his neighborhood. Maybe he was afraid that a rival gang was going to do something. I don't know. But I do know that when if you go out into Minneapolis at night and you go into the right neighborhoods, you will find people on rooftops with guns. You will find people.
But that's just like rooftop Koreans, right? Like people who want to protect their businesses.
In some cases, I'm assuming yes, but let's just hope so.
Protect
them from who though?
Right.
Is the
rioters?
You can make the argument that the autonomous zone is trying to protect their people from cops taking in. You could say that people in that area were trying to protect their own businesses.
These people are insane about cops. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know what happens? I'm going to let everyone in a big secret, and this is going to shock a lot of people. You know what happened? If you were in a big city and you're just like walking down the street and there were two cops in front of you and they're walking down the street, you know what happened if you walked past those cops?
Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing. It's like Chicago is notorious for its bad cops. We had a video where like this cop grabbed, or not a video, but a story about a cop grabbed a meter maid because she was riding up. He parked illegally. She wrote him a ticket. So he grabbed her by the throat and lifted her up and slammed her against the wall. Chicago is notorious for crooked cops. And I see a cop on the street. I'm like, howdy. Hey.
Yeah.
These people are like, put up barricades. We need guns. There are police. They're hunting us. They're really delusional, man. But I'll mention this. I think it was in Philly during the riots. There were people tweeting like, hey, stay away from this neighborhood. There's a bunch of, you know, far right guys on roofs with guns, on rooftops with guns. And they post a photo of a bunch of dudes on roofs with guns. All the businesses were safe.
Yep. No, we encountered a place in Minneapolis that this last year, if you looked at New Brighton and where all the looting was, I got to meet some people that it was four guys outside of a tobacco shop. And they all had AK-47s, and they're just chilling there because that was one of two buildings that did not get looted in the area.
And the good news is the left only wants to ban I shouldn't say the left. The Democrats only want to ban AR-15, so AKs are totally fine.
Yeah, let's hope so.
No.
Because there are – I mean, we already instituted a ban of Russian-made AKs. Like, import bans is a big issue.
Right.
So the good news is a lot of companies have moved their manufacturing to the United States. But that is it's a backdoor form.
I just think it's funny when they tweet all day like, you know, we got to ban AR-15s. No one should have one. I'm like, I'll get an AK. Got it, buddy. Thanks.
Yeah,
like,
thanks.
Do you know anything about what you're saying? Because it's meaningless.
Yeah, you got to ask the question every once in a while with gun control. Is it ignorance or is it malice? Those are two different things.
Yeah, it's definitely malice.
Oh, yeah. And at what point in time does ignorance become malice? Because if you look at the foray of data that we have, relating to gun violence and gun control, I mean, it's not a hard argument to make. The problem is that you've made it so many times that no one cares anymore. All the big violence happens in places where there's gun control. Perhaps we should start making the conclusion that gun control begets violence.
And I think malice is, so it's obviously nothing's absolute. There's probably a lot of ignorant people who just follow along, but it's got to be malice. And you need to understand this. When you make the same argument 800,000 times, mm-hmm. and they don't care and keep lying, okay, it's not ignorance anymore. Like when someone says that stupid meme, you know, no self-respecting hunter would use an assault weapon, and then you're like, okay, first of all, assault weapon is a nebulous term that means different things in different places, and it's ill-defined because I love that meme of the Ruger 10/22 with and without a pistol grip, and one's an assault weapon and one's not. And then you mention that hunters use AR-15s. Like I think it's the most popular rifle used in hunting.
Yeah, I wouldn't say the most popular, but it's very common. And you got to look at the different types of hunting because hunting is a broad spectrum.
Right.
If you're hunting wild boar, absolutely. Yes. Of course.
But these people clearly don't know, don't care. And after you explain it, they say, shut up. They just want a tribal win and they want to take power away for you for themselves.
Or it's worse because they just want to have a conversation. Right, they just want to have they just want to have a conversation, right? The story that I get to have is when I went to college after the military, in my senior year, the Parkland shooting happened, and so the woke chapter of the school decided to get together and host a conversation about gun control. The extent of the knowledge of the people in the room: there was me, one other veteran, and a guy who had grown up hunting and who was an avid hunter. The three of us were the only three who had ever owned firearms, ever bought them, and the other 30 people, the extent of their knowledge on anything to do with firearms was watching a single Vice video.
Oh, so they were well-versed and experienced.
Yeah, well, the point is like, yeah.
As kids.
Oh, absolutely, right? They knew exactly what they were talking about. And the problem that you have there is we can look at each other as equals, as people, but we do not have equal information. We do not know, when someone thinks that they deserve a position at the table when they're not even capable of being literate on the subject.
So
why are we debating?
Are you saying service guarantees citizenship?
I am reading that book for the first time because you've mentioned it. I'm reading Starship Troopers for the first time right now.
Well, yeah, it's a huge problem, especially for me because there's a photo of me that Mike Feedy took. So he came out. He's the BMX guy from the vlogs, and he came out with us. And as I was carrying the Barrett, which is a ridiculously large and heavy gun, I had this, you know, grin. Just put it that way.
It was a grin.
It was a grin. I'd call it something more, but we don't swear. We don't do that here.
Smirk?
And so, no, a swear grin. It's a you know. Okay. Anyway, somebody commented Tim's journey from I'm in favor of some reasonable gun control to two absolutists is the greatest character arc ever or something like that. And I was like, it's a good point. And the issue was I lived in a city. I was interested in hearing the thoughts and opinions of those who owned guns, but having never I did fire one, but having not owned any or gone through the process to own any or learned anything about different types of ammunition or weapons, I was like, I think a conversation makes sense. There's some things we can do. And then when the riots broke out, someone tried to break into my house. I'll tell you this. Someone tried to break into my house, and then they made this really, really hilarious meme where it was like, you know the Shibas that are all like weak and pathetic.
Yeah.
It was like Tim in 2019, and it was the weak, sad one saying, "Help! Someone's trying to break into my house. Call 911." And then it was like Tim Pool 2020, and it's like the big ripped dog carrying a bunch of guns, and he's like, "You get what you deserve." So after someone tried breaking in, the cop told me, he's like, I'll paraphrase. He basically said, "Get a gun," and he said, "If it were me, here's what I'd do." So I went to a local police station and I said, what's the process for New Jersey? And they gave me information that was bad. And then I went online, looked it up, and I got information that was bad. And then I was like, I don't have time for this. Like I'm working, you know, crazy hours and everything, you know. So I just lost track of things. Then when the riots kicked up, I was like, I have no choice. And the mistake I made was I should have went to the gun shop first. They want to sell me the gun. They need to make sure I can get the paperwork. I think it took me like 2 months to finally be able to go and pick up the equipment. And, you know, we were talking earlier in the show about Steven Crowder sending me the SIG M400. The reason I couldn't get it for a year, I could have got it sooner, but I couldn't get it because they sent it to New Jersey, which has insane laws, which made it very difficult. The gun had to be modified in several ways before I could pick it up, before they could ship it out to any other store. And so there was a process and it fell through and I'm like, I don't have time to deal with this. They put all these roadblocks in the way to make sure you basically can't do it. Well, now we're basically in West Virginia, and so they just snap their fingers, and here you go. That's what constitutional carry is like.
So that was New Jersey you're moving from?
Yeah, leaving New Jersey.
Yeah, and so you couldn't own the firearm in its current state because of New Jersey law.
Yep.
And so,
which makes no sense.
Which essentially what you're saying is that New Jersey law says that you are legal if you are incapable, and you are illegal if you are capable.
Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
So that means they don't trust you, and that means it's malice.
I just think it was funny. So when we were filming the vlog, and I'm at the gun shop picking up the SIG M400, finally gets shipped in, and one of the guys at the shop. So I do the background check. I do Nick's, and they were researching me, so it's a little bit longer, but it was like 15 minutes. And then he says, "Congratulations, you know, Uncle Sam says you're allowed to have the gun." And I was like, "Oh, thank you, Uncle Sam, for allowing me to exercise my inalienable right." Mm-hmm. That's where we're currently at. It's a rifle. It's crazy because these leftists. There's a lot of ignorant ones, but the people who work for these nonprofits, the people who are writing policy. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. They know that an AR-15 is one pull of the trigger, one bullet comes out. They know. There's no way that they've spent 10, 15, 20 years advocating to ban guns, and they've not actually ever Google searched any of them. They know they're lying. They know they use assault weapon to scare people.
Yeah, there's a classic argument that says something like there's no such thing as an assault weapon, and here's a little known industry secret. Nobody likes a fully automatic weapon is 100% a hobbyist tool, with the exception of very specific military applications. If you're not using a belt-fed machine gun or a submachine gun, like a fully automatic AR-15 has almost no value.
Yeah, we've talked about it quite a bit on the show. I think I remember who it was. Maybe it was Jim. Was it Jim, maybe?
Probably Jim Hansen.
Jim Hansen mentioning maybe it was somebody else. In Vietnam, it was spray and pray. Mm-hmm. And so they just waste so much ammo, and they're like, we can't do this. It's ineffective. So they wanted to make people use semi-auto. It's more, you know, precise.
Well, yeah. So you think about a body mechanics. Like when I'm every individual pull of the trigger, go look at like a 3-gun competition and go look at someone who's really good at it. That guy shoots really fast. It almost looks like he's shooting fully automatic. The fact is that he's doing is with each pull of the trigger, he is making a conscious decision to pull that trigger and put that bullet as best as he can where he wants it. So if I'm just holding the trigger and holding it and swinging my gun around like a hose, I'm probably not going to hit my target.
I think if anybody's played a game like you've played The Division.
I played the first one for about a week.
Division was awesome. Division 2 was pretty good, but I really liked the first one. And then I stopped playing. I don't play that many video games. But you in that game, it's actually pretty great because you can get, like, real guns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I always use, like, my favorite gun to use in the game was the M1 mm-hmm. or M1A or whatever. Because for that reason. A lot of people I know would like to use, you know, submachine guns or whatever in the game. Literally, it's a video game. It's called The Division.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's spray and pray, and you're, like, just hoping your accuracy will be high enough, whereas the way I'd play is just, like, one, you know?
Yeah, you look at a game like Call of Duty, and your character can take an M4 concept and hold it on a decent circle for just the whole magazine. Like,
right.
That's not really... I mean, you can do that. You technically can, but it's just not... Not only is it not efficient, but it's sort of like, is it really video games that are driving the culture? Which is why I cannot wait until one of these big companies comes out and they make a game where you're using the guns like people do in the military. So you're running around with your M4 and it's on single shot.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly how you're going to do it. And so, yeah, given the whole fully automatic mechanic is a little bit more... I don't know, video game normal? It's Doom, I guess. You can paraphrase Halo to this.
Man, I remember growing up, and I'm watching a movie, and you know, my dad's sitting there, and my dad would always you know, comment and say things and predict things, and then I can't remember what movie it was. I'm a little kid, and then like the bad guy sneaks into the room, and then my dad goes, "Ooh, silencer," and then the guy pulls out a gun and goes, "Pew, pew, pew."
Yep.
And like people grow up believing that stuff's real.
Yeah, I mean, go watch the movie Django Unchained, and in one of the late scenes of the movie. The main character shoots another person at one angle.
And he flies the other
and
way.
And they fly a different direction.
That's Quentin Quentin being awesome, by
yes,
the way.
Yes, and I'm and
that we, was funny.
We hope to trust that it's Quentin Tarantino making fun of his own, not taking his work too seriously. But the
I
problem
remember
is
that scene. It was great.
It's great, right? But now people will watch movies like and they will legitimately think that's how it works.
And then they ban things based on the movies.
Yeah, what is that Gelman amnesia effect? You're reading the news, you read an article that you are an expert in, and you realize it's all bunk, you turn the page and then you're like, huh? Like, it's the same thing with firearms. Like, if you're a doctor or a nurse, you know that the nurse TV shows are not really that yes. accurate. But then so when you watch NCIS, it's not the same.
A Department of Diagnostics. You ever watch House?
I saw a couple episodes, yeah.
It was basically, I guess the premise of House was like Sherlock Holmes as a doctor or something.
Yeah.
And so he gets a mystery. I mean, people believe this stuff. Like, I was reading a story about how people would go to the doctor and they would ask the doctor, like, what's wrong with me? I'm sick. And when they'd be like, well, we're not entirely sure. We'll give you a scan. They'd be like, can you send me to diagnostics? They'd be like, what?
What?
Be like Dr. House. And they'd be like, that's not real. That's a TV show.
Yeah.
There's no, like, head doctor to just break into your home and steal your bath soap to mm-hmm. try and figure out if it's got a chemical in it. Like, that's what they do in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the doctors would literally break into the person's house and then, like, take their Drano and be like, look what we found. This is what's killing them. You know what, man? I don't know how you solve for that problem because you're allowed to have TV shows, but mm-hmm. people believe TV and movies are real too much.
Yeah, I would never want to have, like, an enforcement of accuracy committee, right? I mean, there's a kind of a trope that goes about in the military that some people have lost their jobs because they went to advise entertainment and they were too accurate. There's stories about that.
What's the legitimate reason for making suppressors NFA items? For those that aren't familiar, it's like you got to file a tax. It takes like 9 months. You get your fingerprints. It's very difficult to buy.
Yeah, there is a burden entry for owning a suppressor, which is an item that makes it safer to shoot the firearm.
Yeah, it's just insane.
Yeah, what does it do? It protects hearing damage. Now, if you're gonna universalize healthcare, and you're gonna get more people with hearing damage, okay.
So silencers aren't real.
The term silencer is just a colloquial term,
right?
There was a long time when people referred to them as silencer. Right now, people are using the term suppressor more often,
yeah.
And I think some of that is as an attempt to better translate what the object does.
They're still loud.
They're still loud. The bullet passes or breaks the sound. If the bullet breaks the sound barrier, you're still getting the sonic crack, and that's what's going to hurt the most.
Yeah.
So yes, when you shoot a firearm that has a suppressor on, you're probably wearing ear protection as well.
Yeah, yeah. I've fired a weapon with a suppressor. Mm-hmm. It's still loud. Mm-hmm. The recoil was better, and it wasn't as loud.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like people could hear it probably a mile away. I mean,
if you know what it sounds like, yeah, you actually know what it sounds like. But you were talking about events with people in the riots where. Someone is launching fireworks, okay, but someone is shooting a gun and they think it's fireworks.
Well, so in these riots, it's almost never fireworks. Sometimes people will throw fireworks, but in my experience, it's more often than not someone shooting a gun,
mm-hmm.
and then you get really dumb journalists being like, it sounds like fireworks.
There was a tactic in Minneapolis where activists were firing, legitimately firing mortar fireworks at buildings and people.
But those are very different booms, right?
They are.
So
they what, are.
You ever see fire? You know firecrackers? Like you get the red package, you like.
Yeah. I've black been with, cats?
Yeah.
Is that what they're called?
Are they? No, those aren't black cats, are they? Mm. Maybe.
I think they are.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They're like the little red and white ones.
Yeah.
And you light them, they go pop. Yeah. And actually, we had some recently. We had some recently. We were mm-hmm. just popping them off in the parking lot or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But journalists, for some reason, think that people just carry those around with them in cities, especially in like, you know, crime-ridden areas during riots.
Yeah, you can't buy them in Minneapolis, which means you have to go to a different state to get them. So
or it's a gun. Or people are going pop, 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 pop. And they're mm-hmm. like, just fireworks. Just, you know, mind you, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah. Again, their information that's being given to them is bad.
Let's get a little apocalyptic, I suppose. So, you know, we're talking about guns, the right to keep and bear and all that stuff.
Can we just go post-apocalyptic?
Post-apocalyptic. We're not there yet.
Okay.
We got this story from the Daily Mail. Gas prices climbed to 7-year high. Of $3.04 a gallon, despite Colonial Pipeline reopening after dark side hack. All right, so this is what I don't understand. They said it was panic buying. People are just panic buying, you know, and that's why there's no gas in D.C. and in much of these places. And then we found out that the Friday the hack happened, within 3 hours, they paid the ransom to shut it down. So why did they shut down the pipeline? Why was supply threatened if they paid the ransom? Did they lie to the government, which resulted in bad information and a panic? Did they disrupt supply, which led to panic and then an actual shortage? Something doesn't add up. This is the kind of stuff that's going to exacerbate inflation. And it's already getting crazy, man. I mean, you know, we went to the restaurant after shooting, and we waited like 2 hours for food mm-hmm. because they had no staff.
Wow.
Yep. And it was miserable. I mean, I don't want to be mean to the restaurant. They were trying, and I respect them for working like two people on staff for this restaurant because nobody wants to work. Now gas prices are super high. So here's what we were talking about. So we're sitting there. We thought it was going to be 45 minutes. You know, you go in, you order, you get the food, you leave. And then at like 2 hours, I'm like, okay, we're going to get up and go. And then the food finally comes out. And I was like, here's what happens. The prices are skyrocketing, and people are getting unemployment benefits. They're getting $16 an hour not to work. Now Joe Biden's saying he's going to do the $300 tax credit for, you know, up for every kid. So now families can get up to like $3,000 for their kids. So now you got people who just don't want to work. So now you got one line cook at your restaurant. Now you got all these people come in and he's going crazy trying to fill these orders. And eventually he just stops and says, for $15 an hour, no way. I'm done. Mm-hmm. Now you got no cook. Now you got no restaurant.
Yep.
Apocalypse.
This kind of shortage is something that my parents have been concerned about for the entire time I've known them. This is something that my grandparents were concerned about. My grandparents were stockpiling in the mountains in New Mexico to make sure that they were safe if and when there was, for example, a trucker strike. They were very concerned about like the Cuban Missile Crisis. I think this was around that time. And this is something that I think that modern people don't take seriously anymore. And I think that there is like this derogatory term. We're called preppers. You don't want to be a prepper. A prepper is some old redneck dude who just is, everybody thinks they're crazy because they think the end of the world is coming. Well, like Tim says, what if it rains? Sometimes it rains. That's
well, I think there's a difference between, you know, a prepper and what we would do, for instance.
Right, but there is like this, there's this the stigma to just being definitely prepared. And people call it reactionary, which I was telling you earlier that I don't understand. How can you be reactionary when something hasn't happened yet? You're trying to think ahead.
Yes.
I don't see that as being an issue.
Yeah, well, when did self-sufficiency become a pejorative?
Right.
When the rich people want to make sure they can get gas and supplies before you. And then you'll get news outlets saying, we shouldn't report on this because then people will panic. And then what they do is they whisper to their family, make sure you go buy gas right now.
Yeah, like would that be the same thing as saying you shouldn't get, you don't need to wear a mask, you don't need to go out and buy one so we can stockpile a bunch of
yes.
them and now
exactly.
we're going to make it necessary.
Exactly.
So we're gonna make sure it hits our warehouse so that we can charge you for it, not them.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So when the Colonial Pipeline stuff happens and they're like, there's no supply shortage. Mm-hmm. And then we're watching videos of cars lined up in gas stations shutting down. And it's like, what are you talking about? Oh, no. We meant in terms of the national supply. Yeah. Well, no one's asking about that. They're asking about their local gas stations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, these journalists are whispering. The security people are whispering, telling their friends and their family to go stock up while you still can.
Yeah.
Go buy your toilet paper before it's too late.
Yeah, the I got mine philosophy. You know, you can change it. You can ruin the system after I got mine.
Right.
You can, as long as I have, and that is a, I mean, humans are selfish creatures to some extent, right?
Oh, for sure.
To some extent,
wild
yeah.
animals, man, especially when panic takes hold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now I'm wondering if this is, well, I guess it doesn't matter if it's panic. What matters is prices are going up. There's a global shortage. Now, I love this. What did they say first? There's no inflation problem. Don't worry.
Uh-huh.
A week later. Okay, there's inflation. What should we do about it? Now Bloomberg publishes a story saying there's a global supply shortage of basically everything. So what's happening is a combination of things. You shut down the economy. People stopped working. They leave their jobs. You can't just find people again. Like a steel mill isn't just going to be like, okay, let's just teleport someone here to start making the steel again. A lot of these people left, moved. A lot of people moved out of New York. 500,000 people move out of New York. What are you going to do to fill those jobs? You can't do anything. So now they can't just restart the economy. The problem is Biden is also just printing money and dishing it out to everybody, firing the money guns. So people don't need to go back to work. If you don't make stuff, there's no stuff.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
So now these businesses are struggling to get the stuff they need to make new stuff. And then people can't buy it. So what happens? Two people show up at, you know, the hot dog stand. And the guy's got one hot dog left. What do you get? You get a bidding war. You get, like, I'll give you $5 for it. I'll give you 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 15. I'm not spending $50 on a hot dog. Now a hot dog costs $15. Everybody's going to be fighting over these materials. And one of the things that we're seeing, according to Bloomberg, is that a lot of businesses are buying as much raw material as possible. And then all of a sudden, everything's sold out. They're hoarding it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Panic buying.
That's ridiculous. That's what they did in there's a Canadian ad for during World War I where they were like, do not hoard flour. Have you guys ever seen that? It's like a comic mm-hmm. book ad.
I have seen
Ian,
that
what
one,
did yeah. you just buy?
I bought about 250 pounds of flour.
Why?
Oh my gosh.
Because I'm not panicking.
Right. I'm pretty sure that's panicking.
I'm about 8 months ahead of the curve.
When does it expire?
Yeah, like 2 years, a year and a half, but we can freeze it too.
You're going to eat 250 pounds of flour?
I think we go through about 5 pounds a week.
Oh.
So Ian engages in kneading bread
right.
as a stress reliever? Is this what I need
Ian
to know?
He makes a lot of bread.
Gluten.
He does.
Yeah, I made bread, two breads in
He's
the last
quite the
2 days.
Ian makes a lot of bread.
And then I was pouring maple syrup on it,
yep.
and then it soaks through the bread.
Ooh.
Then you mop it up, and it's like a French toast without having to cook it.
Oh,
you
cool.
got to get off all that sugar, man.
Hey.
You're the guy who's ragging on sugar all
According
the time.
To Vladimir Putin, what you got to do is learn to cook. He was giving a talk to a bunch of like college students, and they were like, Vlad, what should I do as a man, as a Russian man? And he's like, learn how to cook. And they all laugh and like, no, really, what should I do? And he was like, learn how to cook.
Because when the apocalypse comes,
yeah, Putin's
and you're eating rabbit.
Learn how to cook.
Yeah.
It's going to take 2 hours at the store, then it's going to be 4 hours, then it's going to be closed.
I'm so thankful that my family taught me how to cook as a kid.
Yes.
It's like, yeah. And it was just because I come from a culinary family. So
shout out
to mom.
Speaking of hunting for food, we let Bucko out, and he's like an outside cat. He caught a baby rabbit.
Oh!
Brought it for us,
and
yeah.
he started eating it on
oh.
the porch. And it got blood on the porch, and I'm like, dude, you're getting stains. I'm like, what are you doing? And then he just looked at me and went, meh. And I'm like, okay, dude. And then he went off and hunting again.
Uh-huh.
He's loving it. But, you know, it's funny to talk about the cat doing these things, but he's got the right idea, man. I think people need to get back to some of those basic survival skills. I'm not saying people should go and eat cicadas out of the ground. That's insane. But I think it's important that people learn how to do some basic stuff. Go camping. Remember when the Boy Scouts were all about, like, I don't know, just being a well-rounded person and learning how to be responsible, and now it's just weird cult diversity.
Yeah, the origin of Boy Scouts is like a pretty cool tale of heroism, and now it's nothing but like American mediocrity.
What is the, what's the origin of it?
It was, if I'm not mistaken, it was a war veteran, I think from World War One. I'm pretty sure it was a World War One veteran who basically came back to the United States and wanted to provide a program for young men, young boys, to become better people through individual challenges.
I love it.
Right? So, like, it's the whole idea of the merit badges is so that the kids can get some sort of, the young boys can learn some sort of concept of forward thinking and planning. So I want to get this achievement. This is what I have to do to accomplishment. I can't just buy it.
It's like a video game.
Yeah, I mean, it is a proto-video game.
Yeah.
Very much so a proto-video game.
Well, anyway, Ian, you were mentioning something about, you know, don't hoard flour.
Yeah.
What was that? What was that? 'Cause I cut you off.
Oh, in Canada in World War One, they had, like, national, like, do not hoard flour. It's a felony. I don't know if it was what they called it, but they would, like, come to your house and arrest you, and there's a picture of cops, like, walking by the house and people inside hiding their flour.
That sounds communist.
Because as the food starts to disappear, they're going to tell you don't hoard.
I mean, does anybody else want to laugh at that a command economy, which is always supposed to eliminate scarcity, automatically, immediately produces scarcity?
Yeah. Like, as people are dumb.
I mean, it's a self-correcting problem, though. It's like, okay, let the command economy do the thing, and we're going to go be self-sufficient over here.
Well, hold on. I hear you, but what, 100 million dead?
It's not. I'm not saying it's not a tragedy. It's terrible.
Yeah, I mean, these communist countries did technically correct themselves by collapsing in on themselves.
Yeah.
Yes.
Failing.
Yes.
But they were able to just murder their way into maintaining power for a century.
Because the people of capacity, whether it's moral or capability, either left the country or were killed.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big problem. Could you imagine, you know, an able-bodied man of good moral standing and principle living in an urban center and then freaking out because of riots and being, I don't want to live here, and then leaving? Or somebody who maybe lives in an area like that planning on leaving?
Are you saying I'm able-bodied?
I'm talking about me and you, actually.
Okay.
I'm joking. Because we were in the Philly area, and I was like, we shouldn't be here. But all right, making fun of myself, be over with. What I think when we leave these areas, we voted.
Yeah.
And we advocated. And we talked. Mm-hmm. And the community votes for self-immolation. And I don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah, I'm not interested in saving the city. But that's the whole, like, that's, when you look at the Second Amendment, there's two ways that it's often interpreted from the positive side. So we're going to make the assumption that those who are arguing for gun control either disdain or don't care about the Second Amendment. But now you have the Second Amendment, people who defend it on a sort of tribalism. It's a little bit more political. And then you have people who understand the principle of it. So for me, you know, you think about it simply, the fact that people over 200 years ago wrote on a piece of paper the Second Amendment, you know, the right to known bear arms, whatever, the Second Amendment, the fact that they put that on paper doesn't really mean anything for me. The what really means, because that paper is not going to defend me against a malicious actor. The fact is that that paper is there to inform the American people that it's like, it is your God-given right. It is a human right, not a civil right, to own a firearm.
Yep.
It's a human right. And so that sounds like, it sounds sort of, well, you know, the term human right is thrown around a lot today. Why is it a human right? The right to self-defense is something that you have because you're a human. Whether or not you believe it's because of Imago Dei and you're coming from the Christian heritage, or you think about human equality, if you believe in human equality at all, you would never in any way argue for one group of people to go to another group of people and disarm them, because now they're not equal.
So since when does Second Amendment not include swords?
I mean, I know there are places where you can't own swords, but...
Yeah. It's interesting when you look at some states where they ban basically every version of a weapon in any capacity except for guns, because Second Amendment. And I'm like, it says to keep and bear arms.
Yeah, you can, like, there's places where you can't own you cannot carry brass knuckles, but you can carry a six shooter.
I think that's ridiculous. As if the founding fathers at that time only used muskets.
Yeah, I mean,
they had tons of weapons. They had knives. They had bows and arrows.
Yeah. Big knives.
Cannons.
Yes. Well, we have the American Bowie knife. Yes. Mm-hmm. Classic example.
I think one of the biggest mistakes that has been made over the past, you know, 100 plus years or whatever, is that even 2A advocates have fallen into the trap of arguing only on behalf of guns. Hmm. As if the founding fathers literally only had muzzle-loading muskets and nothing else. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure when they said keep and bear arms, they carried knives with them. Mm-hmm. And they probably didn't consider someone would come and take them away. Now you get states that are like, your knives are gone, your batons are gone. You can't carry a baseball bat unless you also have a baseball and can prove you're going to a baseball game. You can't carry a sock full of quarters. Hmm. Can't do that. But a gun, okay. Second Amendment.
Possession is considered intent.
Of what? Baseball bat or a sock of quarters?
You owning a firearm is perceived as you wanting to do violence on somebody. That's
I'm just saying I think Second Amendment includes any weapon.
I agree with you. Absolutely.
But there's tons of places that have banned swords.
Yeah. Okay, let's not say they've banned swords. They've infringed upon your human rights.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Let's not say that they've banned swords. They haven't banned swords. They are saying that we will do violence against you if you own something that can do violence.
So in that capacity, I'm just saying it's great that they built this shield in written word that protected us for a good, you know, couple hundred years. We'd be worse off without the Constitution, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, imagine, look at it this way. There is a great giant dragon beast that is government authoritarianism. Mm-hmm. And it's been breathing fire on the noble hero who's holding up the Constitution as a shield. And eventually that shield starts burning through and long enough period of time of sustained government authoritarianism and we start losing our rights. Interestingly, we have this Supreme Court case. So SCOTUS rules police cannot search homes without warrants in the name of community caretaking. This is unanimous. 9-0. So that's promising. Even the liberal justices were like, a cop can't go into your house without a warrant and take all your guns because they think you're ill or something. It's a good sign. But it's crazy to me that the argument is getting close to the red flag law stuff. And a lot of people, I guess right now, are like, oh, of course they can't have, you know, they can't without a warrant. But what they've been actively trying to do is get a warrant claiming that you're unwell and then violating your rights.
Yeah. Disarming you through a subversive means, and I think it's according to the Geneva Convention, disarming a population is considered an act of war.
Wow,
as it should be.
I believe that somewhere it's either it's Karl von Clausewitz, but we haven't had a von Clausewitz in a while.
So you might know this, but what percentage of the time is a genocide preceded by removing guns from the general population? Because I was able to come up with more than one example to send to someone I was arguing with.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's 100%, but it's basically 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, because they are one and the same. And this is how you think about tyranny. So we often think, or the thing is oftentimes said something like, well, if you disarm a population, then you will have genocide, or then you'll have some sort of massive, massive tragedy, horrible authoritarian argument. And so we use it as this argument of like the one begets the other. I don't think that's the right way to think about it. The rather is I don't think it's the right way to think about it because it creates an opportunity for someone to say, we won't do it this time. You know, we'll take away your guns, but we won't genocide you this time. Like you're essentially
strong.
You're holding your entirety of your existence and your hope on the fact that they won't do something. Mm. Whereas I think the better way to think about it is the act of taking the firearms away from somebody is wrong in the exact same way as it is to target a population in that way.
Well,
one doesn't beget the other. They fall in the same vein.
You need to understand that if the Earth is to join the Galactic Federation,
mm-hmm.
we can't have a bunch of crazies with guns who are going to shoot the aliens when they show up. So they got to disarm us for the sake of the Galactic Federation, right?
Your condescension is coming through.
Wow. No, I'm just being ridiculous. No, I'm just kidding. There's it's a bunch of elites who would lie to the general public to protect themselves and their family. They would tell you there's no gas shortage so they can go buy gas before you can.
Mm-hmm.
They would tell you that everything's fine. There's tons of toilet paper so they can buy it up before you can. They would buy a bunch of stock while serving in Congress and then pass regulations on these companies which benefit their stock decisions, their trading decisions. Mm-hmm. And they would come out and say, you can't own weapons because safety. Now, for me, I've got five armed guards around me at all time, paid for by your tax dollars.
Yeah, and
but no guns for you.
We saw this last year. The exact same people that were arguing to defund the police spent millions of dollars making sure they had very armed people protecting their house. And we,
right.
And it's like, and you can't look at that and say, oh, that's funny. You should look at that and go, like, appalled by that. The even the people who voted for
but
these.
We do, man. I mean, the people who watch a show like this. Mm-hmm. Probably most conservatives, we are appalled by that, but there is a large faction in this country of extremely ignorant tribal individuals who have no idea what's going on. I posted this on Facebook. I said, what happened to all those people who used to come in my mentions and just like promote Joe Biden and rag about Trump? They're all gone.
Hmm.
All gone. You know why?
Cause
they never cared about Biden.
No, because you, what, bought guns? Now you're a bad conservative man?
No, back during the election, all of these people I knew who cared nothing for politics, never did, all of a sudden were like, oh, Biden, we had to vote for Biden. We must do it.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/Tim. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/TIM.
And then Biden gets elected, and they're gone. They no longer care about Trump. They no longer care about Biden. They don't care about politics. Now they post about stupid nonsense. And I'm like, I thought, what about all those things you were? So what happens is these people now have voted for a man who is, by like every objective metric, failing. And I love these op-eds where they're like, Biden's had the best 100 days of any president ever. And I'm like, yeah, if your head's in the toilet, you're not paying attention. But a lot of these people just walked away anyway. So now things are getting worse, and too many of these people vote for trash laws and leave us worse off for it. I don't know how you solve for that, unless like Starship Troopers or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, in order to vote, you must prove ownership of a firearm.
Yeah,
I mean, then you'd at least have skin in the game. It's meant to be facetious, but it does get the point across.
Mandatory gun ownership.
I mean, we don't. The problem with containing something, a vote like this, is not, it's not a very complicated problem. It's that who gets to choose, right? This is essentially the question of all power like
Thank
this.
Thank you.
Who gets to choose,
That's
right?
The question.
So if you make it, you know, one of the arguments that comes up is something like, we don't want people who are mentally in, thankfully for the Supreme Court case that you were talking about, we want to make sure, at least to some extent, people of certain mental issues don't own firearms, right? We kind of want to, there's this sort of, it's, let's take the question honestly and look at it that way. Yes, that's true. Who gets to choose? Big question.
It is an interesting point, because I've brought up several times, the Second Amendment doesn't say the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed unless you're mentally ill.
Yeah, I know. And it is a problem. Like, it is a legitimate mental problem. Or you say, like you were arguing about, if you do the time, if you pay your debt to society, you should have your rights restored. So
a good point was made to me, though, that the Constitution does allow for rights to be restricted after or only through due process.
Only through due process.
So and mental deficiency, I believe, through due process, then all right. I understand that argument. That makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you know, I own a bunch of guns, and then there's a claim filed against my mental health, and we go and there's a legal process, and then after determining I'm unwell, then they come and take everything.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense to me. I'm still worried about it because mental health is not objective.
It's an ambiguous category. In some ways, it is viewed as an ambiguous category.
Oh, yeah.
So some guy can just be like, I was looking at Ian, and he is crazy. My professional experience is that he is crazy and dangerous.
Dude.
And then the judge is like, I agree. Seize his guns.
Anyone that's got like a medical marijuana card for stress or any kind of psychological issue could then be deemed like unwell and unfit to hold a gun. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. You can't buy a gun if you smoke pot, right?
Well, you're not supposed to. So can and should are different questions. There is a question on the 4473 that asks, are you currently or are you consuming illegal substances? And it's and the 4473 is a federal document. And
straight up, if you smoke pot, you can't buy a gun.
So technically speaking, if you are committing a very big crime if you are currently consuming marijuana, or not like smoking it at the gun shop. But, I mean, that's...
No, but not technically, literally.
Right. You are
the federal government literally says you are committing crime if you consume these things. Hunter Biden did it.
Yep.
It's freaking crazy, man. Schedule 1 narcotic marijuana. Mm.
That makes no sense.
What the heck?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, there's a parallel that's kind of coming through in the world, and this is kind of begging the question, but there's a joke. Who won the war on drugs? Weed won the war on drugs, right? It's kind of a humor. And how did weed win the war on drugs? Mass noncompliance.
Yeah.
You could also look at that in a sort of philosophical sense. It was self-reliance. Well, the government's not going to let me have my weed, so I'm going to get it myself. The government's not going to allow me to protect my family, so I'm going to figure out myself.
It's time to end the war on guns.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But how do you do it? For us, we're doing it through culture. We're doing it through going out and doing things. We have our publications. And what do we get for it? We get pulled off of newsstands.
Really?
Yep. Our magazine, anything gun related has been pulled off of newsstands. No one talked about it. You didn't see a giant New York Times post.
When Google bans Gundam Wing because it's got gun in the name, you know they really don't like guns.
But how are we being self-reliant? Here's a good example. If you own a gun store, give us a call. We'll stock it in on your shelf, right?
There you go.
If you own a gun store, if you own an FFL, you can get a hold of us. You can get a hold of us through our website, and we have a program to stock our magazines, because we've got 4 different magazines. Concealment, which is urban, smaller firearms, all about safety, concealed carry, making sure you're doing things the right way, being good at it. And then you've got Recoil, which is the main magazine. This is sort of the big news gun industry things. Maybe it's someone came out with something really innovative, or you know, there's an advocate. Well, we did Maj Touré. We put
yeah,
in,
he's
you know,
yeah.
you know?
Cool dude.
So he's, you know, Maj Touré is doing something great. There's Chris Cheng is doing something great with AAPI Go. So we are grabbing. We have those 2 magazines. Then we have Off Grid, which is much more focused on skills, survival. And it has, and I think of it, the advantage that Off Grid has, is it has a lot of things about doing, right? So it's not just about gear, because a lot of survival, a lot of the negativity that comes from survivalist groups or preppers is they're just about buying stuff. It's the classic, you know, heavily unfit person with a bunch of stuff is not going to survive the apocalypse, right?
Yeah.
And then the last one we have is Carnivore, which is all about high end. Field to table
meat consumption.
Yep. So
I loathe to think about what's going to happen to these cities in the event that there's like an actual shutdown. The water shuts off. People are going to start dying of dehydration. They'll be drinking blood in a day.
Yeah, you'll have. Yeah, I mean, historically speaking, you'll have a very short period of very very ugly violence, and then you'll have a very long period of probable starvation.
Oof.
You know,
people fleeing like crazy in random directions.
Well, and the solution is actually in itself. And I think the solution to this one is not just buying a bunch of stuff. It's actually community. I mean, the term community is thrown around a lot publicly right now. But, the antidote to this classic idea of a guy in a basement with a bunch of bullets and a bunch of food is that he's going to die alone. What is prison? It is living in a box for 30 years. You know, it's taking your life away. Life is time. So survival, real survival, when we're talking about things like this, is actually 100% based on community, social interaction with people who you actually trust, that you can have them to protect you from making mistakes that you would otherwise not know, right? So someone who knows water, someone who knows ecology, someone who knows, hey, don't eat those plants. That's a simple form of it. A more complicated one is you're desperate. We know each other. We take care of each other. We're not waiting for the government to come and save us.
It's actually quite remarkable how, people in cities mostly, but basically everybody is extremely detached from the basic requirements of survival.
Yeah, I mean Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah.
Right. It's not an ultimatum, but
people, you take a person in the city and you put them in the woods, it's just not going to go well.
Sure, because they have no reason to be adapted to the woods. If you live in an urban environment your whole life, you're never going to need to adapt the abilities to do that. It's a luxury.
You will need to adapt the abilities. It's likely. At some point in your life, you will need to understand basic survival, even if you live in a city. It's just that And they're immediate. They don't.
That life has been kind to them to the extent that they've never been thrust in a situation like that? Sure, that's absolutely true. But I still want to return to the idea, like, self-sufficiency is a good thing.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not, you know, when you have a neighborhood, like, say, you know, you live in a condo and you know your neighbors, it's not a bad thing to know your neighbors and being like, oh, I know such and such is a diabetic, and I can help them. I can help take care of them this way. It doesn't mean you're kicking down their doors and saying, "Here, take the insulin."
It's good. People don't realize how brutal it'll get if there's actual like power outages or like rolling blackouts, even. Let alone if the water shuts off or the electricity goes out for an extended period of time. People who are diabetic, you got to refrigerate that insulin. That's a huge problem for just storms going out. And they got to have generators usually to make sure the fridges keep running. But there's a lot of other things too. People's medications will spoil. If you got antibiotics in the fridge, they're gone. Vaccines go bad.
Yep.
Very, very quickly without electricity.
Yeah,
so, bring it on, Greta Thunberg. Let's turn off all the fossil fuel power plants and then see how long humans last, because they will start tearing each other's throats out as it gets bad.
Or they'll just build a pipeline and not tell you about it.
Pipeline?
A pipeline, yeah. You know, if you tell people they can't have something and they need it, they'll figure out a way.
Look, one of the big themes of this is that they're going to tell you, oh, no, don't go buy this. Then they go rush out and buy it.
Sure.
They're coming out saying, like, oh, the water is going to rise 20 feet. I'll take that beachfront condo on Miami Beach. How much is that? Mm-hmm. Water's rising? No, I don't care about that.
Yeah, sure. Ammunition prices are high right now. So if you're hoarding ammunition, it's kind of rude. But right? But the other thing about it, too, is how about you just take seriously what you think you need? It's not more. Panic buying is a hard thing to define, and panic buying is what people do when they feel like they're insufficient with what they have.
It's interesting. I mean, Ian bought a ridiculous amount of flour for two years.
Yes. Yeah, I was surprised it was available because last July it wasn't. You could get four bags of flour.
So why buy so much flour?
You know, who knows what's coming in 2 months? I like to look ahead and rest easy.
You see, that's the thing. You know, you're hoarding, is it someone being prepared or is it someone panicking?
Yeah, there is a good question to be said there. Are you just a good businessman and you know you can buy better in bulk and you're going to be able to store it and are you being proactive?
After the apocalypse, all the neighbors are going to be like, bread. And Ian's going to be like, I have the bread.
And we'll feed you all.
And he's going to like rip it and throw it to people. Yeah. And they're going to cheer.
Bread for bullets. Bread for water, dude. Feed the masses.
I don't think anyone would trade you bullets for bread. They only need one.
I'll let them go hunt and I'll keep them healthy when they come
home.
No,
you don't understand. Yeah. They only need one.
Oh, well, that's a good point.
You grossly overestimate the accuracy of most people.
That's fair. That's fair.
Let's assume it's point blank. They don't need any, actually. They just need the weapon. You know, then most people would just capitulate. Just take whatever you want. Leave me alone.
Take my flour. Take my bread.
Yeah, I mean,
fire me.
But
violence is expensive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's costly. To go do violence on someone is expensive. I mean,
what about an apocalypse, though?
It still is, right? So let's take the metaphorical post-apocalyptic situation. You have your little tribe and they have their little tribe. For you to go attack their tribe to try to take their stuff, you have to willingly acknowledge that if you lose, it's final.
Yeah.
Right? Or, you know, or it's final, it's extremely costly.
Not just that, but if I go to Ian and I say, Ian, make me bread. And then Ian's like, in exchange for what? And I say, I'll trade you something. Then Ian's skill and value as a human being contributes to the production of bread. If you just go and take the flour, all right, well, now you got to make the bread.
Yeah.
So there's a cost you lose out. Trade is probably safer and easier for everybody. Sometimes trade just doesn't work, though, because starving person might not have anything to trade with.
A lot of times it's the language barrier. Fortunately, we have that going for us in the U.S. is it's easy to communicate relatively. You know, we don't – long-range communications with the power grid down would be a little bit more complex. Like how do you
radio.
Tell them that you're not a – that you're not a danger without getting close, that might be a challenge. You can kind of signal.
You gotta create a call.
A call. I like ham radios, calls. Yeah, yep. Bird calls. Those bird words.
Maybe like a
yeah, yeah. We can go back to classic bird sounds. I will lose at every time. They'll just be like, "Why is that man sounding like a chicken?"
But are we? Is this paranoia? I mean, are we just we're talking about all this stuff? Well, we're seeing the news, we're seeing gas prices, and we're like, "Oh, it's the end." But maybe nothing happens.
I got this Samantha Bee on the brain thing. I watched
what?
Some Samantha Bee the other day just to delve into the depths of it.
You get out. You get
it
out.
It was dark.
You get out. You don't watch.
They made a video like
house.
Just do something about guns, and it was all these celebrities being like, okay. "Just do something. Just do something about guns."
And like, they don't know what they're asking for. This is what really bothers
literally
me.
Literally don't, yeah.
It dawned on me tonight.
Yeah.
Is the vagueness of it. They don't, it's not like, please ban this aspect of this thing.
They said do something, right?
Yeah, they're so vague.
Okay, okay. Here's what I propose.
Repeal the NFA.
Right, you got me. I will do something.
Yes.
Repeal all gun laws.
Yep.
And I'll go buy a gun.
Sure. Yeah, you know, everyone who owns a gun gets to vote. Free guns for everybody.
Yes.
I do not. I do not.
That's a little light. I think mandatory guns for everybody.
Okay.
You have to. When you sign up for the Selective Service.
If you don't have an M3 Carl Gustav, holla.
They want you to sign up for the Selective Service.
Mm-hmm.
You should also be required to go in, fill out the form, drop it, and be handed one AR and one handgun.
Yes.
Or a rifle and a gun and whatever they have available. Some, like, standard issue U.S. government garbage weapon.
It works.
But, you know, it works, right?
People like to say the Swiss did it right, but that's we're talking about very different countries.
What they do.
Swiss, I mean, there is a sense of mandatory firearms ownership and mandatory kind of – it's not exactly that, but the Swiss are oftentimes used as an example because everyone owns guns.
Oh.
Functionally, everyone owns guns, but Switzerland also stays out of – you know,
interesting
country.
You know? Yeah, but you're also looking at, like, you can make another argument, something like Japan has no firearms and they have very little firearms violence. They're also
it's an ethno state.
Ethno state, right?
Like, they don't allow immigrants. It's crazy.
It's very small.
Right. It's, like, extremely restrictive.
Yeah, Switzerland is also small. Sorry. And don't they also require military service in Switzerland?
I wanted to say that's correct.
I'm not sure.
I don't want to say something I don't remember fully.
Well, so. I also look at Israel because they have a similarly small population. Everyone there, for the most part, is armed, and everyone is required to serve in the military.
And
I don't know what their gun stats are like, but it's probably not bad.
And they're constantly under threat. I mean,
right, exactly.
Again, all these things are multifaceted arguments, but you take the example of the Samantha Bee thing, right? Just do something. You want to look at what gun control is? It's celebration before success. Because no one ever says, hey, we established these new laws. Look what the effects are. We say, just do something. Yay, we put this in place. Never heard from again.
Here's what we need to focus on, right? Right now, when people complain about government and guns, it's about restrictions. We need to change it. So I propose the creation of the Department of Gun Services.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're 16, you have to go in for your mandatory gun from the government.
Mm-hmm.
And the complaints about guns and government should be the lines take too long.
Mm-hmm.
I had to go to the DGS to get, you know, an AR-15, and I had to wait 20 minutes. 20 minutes for this gun. It's ridiculous, huh?
I mean,
man, when I was a kid, it was 10 minutes. You're in, you're out. You got your gun, your box of ammo.
Mm-hmm.
These bureaucrats, man,
now
I tell you.
Serving.
Yeah.
Yeah, now serving at aisle four.
The DMV adds like another letter.
Yes.
Oh, jeez.
37Q.
Oh, there is conscription in Switzerland, by the way.
There is conscription. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. And then for your DMG or DGD.
Department of Gun Service.
DGS, I like this.
Yeah, Department of Gun Service. Yeah. So not everyone knows how to use a manual. Not everyone knows how to use a stick shift. So now we have to just give them all automatics.
Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or give them a call at 877-646-5347. Again, that number is 877-646-5347. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, you know, some people don't have the strength, so there's a variety of options.
Mm-hmm.
No, you'd get some garbage government stock crap. You know, you're not going to get the best of the best. But hey, you know.
Yeah.
Mandatory gun ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Mandatory firearms ownership would be an interesting example.
You go in and you have like a little book explaining like basic gun operations, and you do like a 1 through 10 check, check, check. Mm-hmm. And the guy reviews it and he's like, all right, you know, here's your gun, and you can choose between the handgun we have over here, and fill out the forms, and then they hand it to you and you leave and you walk out. And
that terrifies me.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe because I don't know enough about guns.
Do you want to know why I do the analogy of the Department of Gun Services?
Yes.
When you go to the DMV and there's like cars everywhere, right? And there's a lot of people who are student drivers. Do you like start sweating and, and fear that someone's going to hit you?
Good point.
When you cross a busy street, when you're jaywalking, are you like, there's cars and they could hit me at any moment?
Not really.
I see people with guns all the time and I just don't even think about it. Because people don't typically just run you over or shoot you or beat you. A guy could pick up a rock off the ground and hit you with it. You know, it just doesn't happen. Sometimes it does. Sometimes they can use guns. I understand when the left are like, yeah, but with a gun, they're extremely destructive and violent. I'm like, it's true, but people also make bombs. People do a lot of things. And so you shouldn't take away someone's right to self-defense because you're concerned and you don't want to be responsible for yourself. I just don't see that as an appropriate argument. I understand the fear, but I cross busy streets all the time and I don't get hit by cars. You know, if you live in Chicago or New York or LA, you're jaywalking everywhere. And sometimes the cops yell at you and it's stupid. And for the most part, you'll just see the cars. I mean, some people will just walk and ignore the cars. You know why? The cars will break. This is crazy. The cars will actually stop to avoid hitting you.
Huh.
So if you were at the Department of Gun Services and someone walked out with a weapon and they were like, let's say there was like a range. If you're on a gun range and you step onto the range, they scream and shut everything down. They don't want you to get hurt. Or if you're at a range and you like turn around, you're pointing at someone, will tackle you.
Yes.
Normal people are trying to be safe and don't want you to get hurt, whether it's a car or a gun or whatever.
So gun services, they hand you the gun in like a locked box and then you have to carry it home in a locked box.
Why?
I don't know. Not so you don't freak people out.
What?
When there's like 30 people in the
waiting room.
I'm
not freaked out when I see a guy in a Hummer driving down the street.
It's another culture. You just got to get people comfortable with it one day at a time.
I've crossed Archer Avenue on the south side of Chicago and you got, big trucks and tractor trailers or whatever, and it's like you just run across the street. I'm not like, the guy's going to hit me. Dude, people in my neighborhood, because we have the freight trains where you're always getting stuck by trains by Midway. It's annoying. The kids in my neighborhood would run alongside the train and jump on it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Could you imagine if there was a guy and he had like he was like riding around on a car with a Gatling gun and you ran and jumped on his car and were like holding his gun? That'd be ridiculous. That'd be insane. That's a problem. People would, like, in Chicago, jump on these trains. Don't do it. It's really, really, really dangerous. But people aren't scared. They're the opposite of scared. They're brazen. So if somebody walked out with a weapon, people aren't going to care. It's the weirdest thing to me that in New York, you go to Grand Central, and there's, like, cops in, like, full tactical gear with rifles. People aren't freaking out like a cop's going to shoot anybody.
I think Ian has a point, because when cars were brand new, people were terrified of them. People were scared to go in them. People were scared to get hit by them. So maybe there should be like a transitory time where we're like accommodating people to everybody having a gun.
And there was a time when they didn't have seatbelts. They didn't know. They were still learning the danger of it all. I don't know what the traffic laws were like in the beginning. Probably they didn't have traffic lights at first.
Yeah, so in this ideal world where everyone is required to have a gun, it might require a little bit of adaptation, I think.
All right, fine, whatever. But let's do Super Chats, my friends. If you have not done this, smash that like button. And take the URL from this YouTube video and just share it across all social media to help out the show. And go to TimCast.com, become a member, because we will have a bonus segment coming up later today at the website, which you definitely do not want to miss. Big news from the government. It gets real creepy. We'll talk about it later. But for now, we'll do Super Chats. The $1 one-liner says, hey, Tim, nice promotion of Iceland. I can see the brochures. Come to Iceland. There's no ice. Enjoy the volcanoes. It smells like farts. That's all true.
Have you been there?
Great place.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So I went to Iceland. There was no ice. I was driving from Reykjavik to I forgot what it's called, like the blue water place. Then it's like all like gray rock, and it smells like farts.
Volcanic rock.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of it smells like farts.
Sulfur.
A lot of sulfur. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's the blue? There's like a blue water place where the water is blue.
Something like that. Wow. It's really cool, but it was really hard. We couldn't get in because it was like booked up like crazy.
Did it used to be ice? Like, did the Vikings call it?
I mean, there's ice. I went to this really cool place. It was cold, and it was just like this massive lake. It's beautiful, man. It's an awesome place.
I heard they called it Iceland, like the Vikings, because they wanted people not to go there, because they wanted it to keep it for themselves. So they told everyone it's just an ice hell, and no one went.
It was apparently a like garbage hole until they discovered geothermal energy.
Mm.
And everybody was just, it was like mining coal or something. Oh. And they're like, we got all this volcanic activity. We could do geothermal. And now they live like kings.
Wow.
Now, abundance of energy, you know?
In response to our conversation earlier about what we're educated by, everything I know about the island of Iceland is from the TV show Vikings.
There you go.
I know nothing.
21st century.
All right.
And then there was the Secret Life of Walter Mitty. So.
Yes, also good.
K.W. Ross says, hey, Tim, I heard they were putting a 40% tax in taxes on Bitcoin for coins sold. And wondered if anyone knew anything about this. Joe Biden has proposed a capital gains tax of like 39.7%. So, yes, that would apply to your Bitcoin. Massive tax. Massive tax.
Wow.
And maybe it's because of Bitcoin. Kyle Buchanan says, HVAC tech here. I tried ordering an outside unit today. The warehouse said they had zero and won't have any for 60 days. Mm. I doubt they will have any in 60 days either. The One Free Man says, low gun regulations equals herd immunity for violent crime. You don't have to carry, but you benefit from those around you being armed the same way an unvaccinated person would benefit from those around them being vaccinated. Hey, there you go.
Interesting.
Crime herd immunity. Plasma says, I bought into Bitcoin at 32K and nearly went net loss, but I am now taking advantage of Elon Musk's tweets and buying more, getting ready for the halving in 2 years when Bitcoin will go to the moon and back. Yeah, so the halving will result in like Bitcoin doubling or more. Okay, I can't read the name here, but this guy says, it's a good thing Crowder has made plenty of political connections over the years. Hopefully they'll vouch for him.
Hmm.
Yeah. Josh L says, question for Forrest. Why don't gun companies name their weapons in a way that you don't have to be a nerd to understand? I own a XD Mod 2.
Why? How do they choose their naming? That is a question that I actually don't know how to answer because everyone does it differently. But it stems out of kind of military mentality of like it's essentially a, what do you call it? It's easy nomenclature. It's an M3 Carl Gustav. We call it a Carl G colloquially, but the M3 is so that I can distinguish it, the M16 from the M4. So a lot of companies use these names, these letter combinations to achieve that end.
Shorthand.
Right on.
It's all shorthand. And I mean, there's other ways that you can do it too. Like you could look at like a Ruger Blackhawk. It's a revolver. It's not the BK-17. Usually the number is affiliated with something to do, not with the caliber, but it all has different ways of doing it. And I think it's really just because it's trendy.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's just how we chose to do it.
So what do the caliber numbers mean? Because like a 22 versus like a 223, dramatically different round, you know?
Yeah, the caliber typically refers to the size of the projectile. It typically refers to the size of the projectile. But now you're looking at, so shotguns being different, theirs is, it's all referencing the size of the projectile is pretty much what it is.
Is it the width of the projectile or the length?
If it should be the circumference or the diameter.
All right, we got Honey and Absinthe says, it is my Boo Thang's 30th birthday today.
Holler.
Will you wish Vincent a happy birthday? We love your show. Also, let me paint a mural in your house, please. Send us an email to spintheufo@gmail.com.
Yes.
And happy birthday, Vincent.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Vincent.
I'm willing to bet it's not going in my house.
Alex Oakley says, I wanted a super chat to say that USD is officially dying. I started a side job over the weekend where I was asked if I wanted to be paid in USD, Bitcoin, or half and half. I chose half and half, so excited to get more Bitcoin. Wow. That's
not
that's
like
excellent.
The cream product.
You chose Bitcoin, right? Please, God. Tell me you chose Bitcoin.
Half and half. Like half US.
Oh, I thought you meant like the half and half cream.
I did too.
I'm
like,
a literal
wait,
kind of guy, though. That's my problem.
I was confused.
So my strength and my weakness.
There you go.
I too am a coffee snob.
Be getting paid in buckets of cream.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, I got all this cream. What am I going to do? I just drink it, I guess.
The grocery store was out.
It's good for
Eli
you.
M says, Tim, could you call Crowder on air right now and get him to summarize what has happened and his way forward? No, that would be really awesome, though. Maybe I couldn't do that. Nah. I mean, it probably would be funny. I'm sure he'd be cool with it, but I can't. Could you imagine getting a call and like you're on the air and you're like, oh wait, what's going on?
Wait, no.
Some
not.
People might just be like, no. Nah.
Part of his strike is that he's not supposed to talk about it.
Wouldn't
so
you get in
right?
No, I could interview him.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, we had Alex Jones on.
Oh,
he's banned.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they still, yeah. They, you know,
They'll be paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Poitz.
Jennifer Reap says, great show and guest as always, and got to shout out my alma mater, Sam Houston State, for winning the national championship yesterday. Eat 'em up, cats.
Ooh.
Hey, there you go.
Congrats.
Someone you may know says, hashtag free Crowder.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Cy Coder says, Walmart is only allowing VAC employees not to wear masks. Well, I'm not VAC, and when I get back from break, I'm not wearing a mask. I might get fired. But they're going to get sued if they do. Hope I win.
Mm.
I mean, how do they tell if people are or aren't? I mean, I don't know how they even, I think they'll ignore you. I don't think they'll say anything. I don't know. Whatever. Hits Vape says, I work at Best Buy. They just announced today that if employees prove they've gotten the vaccine, you don't have to wear a mask. I've had the virus. Didn't do much at all to me. Now I feel forced to, so I can take off the mask.
Mm.
Yeah, well, talk to your doctor. Zanzibar says, I just joined TimCast.com. Now, where do I go to suggest Magnus Panvidya get a seat for a show? Pro-liberty and bottom unity advocate, what the boogaloo really is. Well, you just did. Carter Joe says, Tim, have Destiny on to discuss the infrastructure bill and voting bills, and he'd like talking about moral frameworks. Definitely. Destiny was an excellent guest. We when Destiny was here, we actually hung out for like an hour just talking about politics, and he's a cool dude. Disagree with him. That's about it. But I disagree with a lot of people. So, you know, I think there's too much like fear of the other. I think it was great to have him out here. Fun guy. I'm sure people don't like him for a lot of reasons, though. Joshua Ryman says, what if what used to be a traffic stop that caught a kidnapper with someone in their trunk gets a pass by? Yeah, well, there's that, too. Rilo says, civilian traffic brigade. Don't you dare show support for Trump or appear at all conservative. You're going to get bombarded with tickets and the state will come after you. You see, there you go. Brown Bear says, Tim, when are you going to have Shoe on Head on your show? When she accepts the invitation and decides to come on the show. Dolly Lance says, how can you continuously assume that the unarmed civilian won't be violent themselves? That's a good point. Unarmed civilian traffic guy might be like, I got a gun.
Yeah, how does that work? Is it a cop? Because a cop, we were trying to figure that out earlier. Like, a cop is a civilian according to military.
No. This new policy is like you in a car.
What the heck?
Yeah.
It's a contradiction of terms, though, because are you hired by the state? Who are you hired by?
Right.
Not what authority outside you group. I mean, they give you a little yellow light to stick on top of your car?
Yeah.
No.
The codification, like the codification of law has a purpose, and it's so that we have a rules by which we understand what we do and don't do. It's not the greatest tragedy in the American concept of law is that we have turned law into a way to make citizens into servants. Instead of realizing that the purpose of law is to limit the government, it is to limit one group of citizens from violating the rights of another group of citizens. It's not to make you safe. It's not to make you happy. It's not to make you wealthy. The purpose of law is so that the one group of people, human beings with the same rights as you, cannot use the power of the state to violate your rights.
Yeah, I don't like paid bail because if the rich people,
it's meaningless to them.
They just buy their way out.
In Chicago, people illegally park at Wrigley Field because they're like $100 ticket. It's cheaper than buying a parking space.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right. Andrew Holker says, I fled the Twin Cities for Duluth last summer. The number of friends I have at U of M who have been mugged at gun at knife point just walking through Dinkytown or riding the light rail is truly insane. Well, there you go.
Wow.
Showland Report says, living in Wisconsin for the last couple of years, never heard a guy from Minneapolis sound so nice and fair.
Oh, thank you.
There you go. Mike Sullivan says, great guest. South Carolina passed House Bill 3094 today. Eliminates state fees for CWP. Will now allow open or concealed carry with a permit. Makes SC a Second Amendment sanctuary state. Great day.
Cool.
Yeah, it's not constitutional carry. You can, like in West Virginia, you can just walk around with the Barrett if you want.
Yeah,
people just laugh at you though because they'd be like, "We get it, we get your point."
There is good
hope here too.
Yeah, there is hope in the world. Like, one of the views that we bring, like I like to bring through Recoil, is that it's not all doom and gloom. It's not all doom and gloom, and it's not all they're taking our guns away. Young Americans don't like gun control.
Yeah,
they don't. They're turning away from it, and whether they're turning away from it because of political means, whether it's Marxism, communism, socialism, whatever, or because they just don't trust the government, they're moving away. On top of that. What is it? There is ways that we are making victories. They're just not as political. They're not as polished theatrical stunts. David Hogg has a massive theater, no substance.
It's nonsense.
Yeah, you know, it's like you have to prop them up while in the background people are changing their opinions about it. Yeah. Look at the last year in gun sales. Records. Massive records. And we're not saying like, because if you look at gun sales throughout history in the United States, it's kind of a steady climb with little spikes that kind of level out, but it never really goes up and then down. It goes up and then down a little bit and then up into, you know, a really good, gun sales is a really good performing stock in the United States.
Yeah.
If it was. But you look over the last year, it jumped and plateaued high.
And yeah, so, you look at the lines in these big cities.
Yeah.
Liberals going lining up outside of gun shops. There was a funny video where this guy, he made a video where he was like, "Stop coming to my store expecting to buy a gun for the first time." These liberals keep coming in and they keep saying, "Can I pay more to get it now?" No. And I just, no, you can't. You voted for this. These are your laws. Shut up. Follow the rules. Because it's probably hilarious to have like your 50th guy come in and be like, "I'd like to buy that gun." "Okay, fill out the form." "Okay, can I get it?" "No, you're on a delay list. Come back in 5 days. We'll call you." "Can I pay more?" "No, you can't pay more. You're being background checked. Shut up and go home."
Mm-hmm.
They get all mad about it.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to have the conversation about universal background checks already in place, stop talking about it.
Right, right, right. Sergeant Buck says, "Just joined as a member. If you want a modern military shooter that handles firearms well, I recommend Insurgency Sandstorm. The Division 2 is great, but it becomes it's become Destiny 2 with cover." I completely agree. Yeah. Eric Rodriguez says, "What are y'all's opinions on bullpup rifles? I personally prefer them, especially as a left-handed person. Love the show. Keep up the great work."
Can I not answer? No, I can. I have never. I do not have a lot of experience with bullpup rifles.
What is it
in compared to a, you know, like an AR-15?
Yeah.
What does it mean, bullpup?
Bullpup rifle. This is the muzzle. This is the buttstock. Right. If my hand is in front of the magazine, the trigger is in front of the magazine, so it goes barrel, trigger, magazine, which allows me to get a longer barrel and a shorter package. That's considered a bullpup. When you take the magazine and you build it behind the trigger. So you look at an AR-15, you've got stock, grip, magazine, rail, muzzle. Bullpup takes the magazine and in the construction of the rifle.
And that gives it better balance so you can have a longer muzzle?
The theory is that you can have the benefit of a longer muzzle without an entirely longer firearm. And that it does accomplish that. It's just, is the juice worth the squeeze? Because you lose something. I think that having the magazine well in front of the trigger guard, and this is... The honest answer is I've been shooting for so much in the military with AR-15 style platforms, and most of the modern militaries across the world use a magazine in front. I'm so used to it, switching to a bullpup would be uncomfortable. It is not the same thing. It's not home. But one of the disadvantages you get is manipulation of the firearm tends to be more uncomfortable. So when I have to load a magazine in here, I get to drop the mag, put a new magazine in the mag well. It's sort of efficient. Yeah. It's all there. But the other one that you start to see, and I think there are quite a few companies that are actually doing this very, very well, is the triggers in bullpups are historically referred to as being terrible. And so you want a good trigger because it adds accuracy. It helps you control the weapon, firearm better. And historically speaking, firearms with a bullpup design had a harder time making a better trigger.
Oh, all right. All right. Meridian Forest says, "Hey, Tim, U.S. Air Force member here. I was raised in North Dakota and thankfully got stationed back in North Dakota. Recently, they voted to ignore a lot of the federal gun regulations here. I'm not going to say I'm for or against this because military." No, thanks for the super chat and thanks for your service.
Yeah.
Make 1984 Fiction Again says, "Civil disobedience and lawsuits. Let's get a win in the bag. I got kicked off a job in the authoritarian state of Massachusetts for not wearing a mask outside laving pavers on blacktop in 80-degree weather with no one near me." Wow.
Jeez.
That's a great name.
Yeah. I was thinking that same thing.
I have read that book, and it's creepy.
It's incredible. Yeah. Read 1984 if you haven't read that.
Yeah. I got that t-shirt.
Yep.
Tom, I think it says Tom, says, "Second time super chat. I feel stupid. I accidentally just sent you $10. Haha, here's another 10. I'm here in Washington State, zero gas shortage, but I just paid $3.59 a gallon to fill up Subi?
Subi.
The Subi.
Subaru.
The Subi. Jeez. Gas is getting expensive. I heard it was like $9 in some places.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I couldn't confirm it.
Yeah, I've just been seeing posts. I don't know for sure.
People are saying California.
That, yeah, in some areas it was absolutely skyrocketing. Rafe Purnell says, please post video of Ian's GF bread recipe. I need it. GF, gluten-free?
Your girlfriend's bread recipe?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's hot.
That was quick.
Quick shout out. I love it.
I'd have to make a gluten-free recipe maybe with almond flour, but I've noticed the wheat flour really handles the yeast and the sugar in a special way. I mix them together sometimes, do like a light gluten with like an almond flour. If it's GF flour bread recipe, I haven't done a gluten-free one in a while.
Ian's got good bread.
I'm down to experiment. It's all about getting that rise.
Kyle Lipka says, Crowder calls it Mug Club. You should call us the Beanie Bros. You know, we did have a conversation about like making membership name something, and I was like, there's going to come a point where we have many more shows, and people will just be like, what is that? Imagine going to like Disney Plus, and it's called like the Mickey Face. Be like, be a Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Club, yeah, that was
join the thing. Join the Mousketeers. You'd be like,
no.
I guess. No.
No.
Nah. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S.? With more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S., they have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. All right. Ace 2020 Boyd says, YouTube is crazy. They can put strikes on Crowder but allow Nike yoga videos with full frontal, no blurs. Also won't let me send this with the full words, right?
Huh.
Dude, there's really messed up videos. There's videos where a guy does like, what's in my butt challenge. They show it.
Whoa.
Yep. They show it.
Yeah.
They actually show his butt?
Well.
Cringe.
They don't show, like. They show it from a perspective where it's like, you can tell what they're doing. They say what they're doing.
So, Crowder actually had a segment where they actually show some of the highly objectionable material that you can find on YouTube. And I don't think YouTube liked that very much.
No. But, I mean, they should have said thank you. You know, I don't have to hire somebody to police my own.
Yep.
But,
Don Jett says cicadas contain high levels of mercury. I don't think eating a bunch of them is wise. Shout out to Ian from Cuyahoga Falls, Monroe Falls Avenue.
Dude, what's up? You ever go to Monroe Falls Lake and take a dip? That's where I used to get shaved ice right over there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I have no idea what you just said.
Oh, that's my hometown. Shout out to my homies, Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. What's up?
Ashley Hayes says, KY masks end June 11th. Look into Andrew Cooper Ryder of Brood in Lexington. Took the fight to Andy Bashir. His weekly protests. Built his own CC processing service after being banned from Stripe and PayPal. He is leading Project Uncancelable in KY.
Cool.
Interesting. Cool. Jelly Bean says, hey Tim, fellow Illinois citizen here. I'm from the suburbs, however. Orland Park area, Oak Forest to be exact. I work in Joliet, New Lenox area, and I paid $3.17 a gallon. I thought Illinois wasn't one of the states affected by the pipeline issues. Maybe the pipeline issues, there's more to the story than they're telling us. But I know all of those areas very well. I just skate in a lot of them. Dane Shell says the left is doing what libertarians couldn't, and that's break down the system enough for a new generation to have a clean slate. The Great Reset, but doing it with bad fuel. Unscalable ideologies. I mean, it, to a certain degree, but they're like kneecapping the police and then replacing them with woke police. So it's not going to get better. It's just getting worse.
Are those woke police disarmed?
No, they're armed.
Okay. So yeah, that's pretty terrifying.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Kev says, first super chat ever. What good is a functioning pipeline if the billing software has been encrypted and you can't bill your customers? They paid the ransom within 3 hours, according to Newverse reports. So they weren't dealing with that.
Amazing.
No idea. Nicholas Nasty says, the purpose of the Second Amendment is to guarantee that the people have any necessary implement to overthrow a tyrannical government, zero limitations. This is only partially true. I'm not a fan of when people are like, it's to overthrow tyrannical government. No, it was literally to defend yourself, period. Tyrannical government or invading force or lunatic criminal. A free state requires a well-regulated militia. Therefore, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. People need to understand there were no police back then. It was all local militia. When there was like a robbery, people would round up the boys and they would be like, hey, get the militia.
Yeah, the Second Amendment is a poem to the people to remind them that they are free, and it is a prohibition against the state.
Yep. Marco says, I have a question for Forrest mainly. With all the critical race theory and other agendas in the Army being pushed, would you still join the Rangers? Love the show.
Oof, that is a good question. You're going to have a small challenge between two decisions. One of them I can answer for you. If you're going to join the Rangers, absolutely. If you're not getting, if you're interested in joining the military right now, you have to go Special Operations, Ranger Battalion, Navy SEALs, Special Forces, MARSOC. It's going to, trust me, the military is all moving in that direction. The global war on terror is known as the rise of the Special Operations. So if you're thinking about joining the military and you haven't looked at Special Operations, absolutely.
What's MARSOC?
MARSOC would be this Marine version of Special Operations. Their contribution. So,
yep. All right.
Second one, looking at critical race theory in the military. If you believe that you have the moral integrity to resist the push of critical race theory, yes, but that has to be a very serious and personal question. Does that answer the question?
Yeah,
really, I guess. It is a very serious question. Take it seriously. Why are you joining the military? Is it out of patriotism? Is it out of duty? Those are easy answers to say on paper, but when you actually have to live them out.
All right. Ossery says, great guest. We vets and country boys will be the ones to survive when the energy hits the fan. Dude, you guys are constantly hyping Ian's bread, and I'm yearning for a road trip, and I'm not even a big bread eater. So we are currently building out, as part of the new website, an auction feature, which is going to allow us to do a two-tiered ticket system for the house. So we want to do Friday night events mm-hmm. every Friday. 10 tickets first come, first serve, and then probably 10, maybe more, tickets that are top auction-based. This way you have the people who are, like, spamming the refresh button, because we only have certain capacity. It's not like we have that much space. So we have to figure out a way to make it fair, and I'm like, two-tier system works because then you have people who can afford to mosey on over, not really worry about time and make their bid and spend more to come. But then people who probably can't afford to can just try and use merit, just get to that ticket first. It'll be difficult. And we'll put in restrictions so that some people don't come every single time. We get more opportunities. But the auction system allows us to basically do anything. So we can auction off a loaf of Ian bread stored properly in dry ice. Now, I don't know what the regulations are.
Right. It might be like a donation.
It might have to be just like Ian as a person sending a person. No. The business will be able to do the auction.
I will make several, at least three loaves of bread for that event.
And then we'll have to put, oh, yeah,
then
people
come. And we'll just slice them into quarters. We'll slice the breads into halves. Then we'll do like a garlic bread. We'll do a cinnamon raisin maybe.
Make sandwiches.
Maple.
We'll have sandwiches ready.
That bread is good.
It makes like store-bought bread just like,
I mean, there's no preservatives. This is the thing. The store-bought bread has natural, they put preservatives in it so it can last on the shelf. This stuff goes stale after 5 days if you leave it out, even if you have it in a bread box.
Yeah, you got to eat it.
Man, if you eat it in the first 2 days, it's amazing. It is just moist and it just holds the, you can't explain it with words.
You guys, you really want to come to these events. So we're in the process of setting things up so that we can actually do this. We just had the driveway redone. We just had some work done in the garage. There's still a process. I know we wanted to do this back in February, and then I'm like, we should have public events. And then we had like a legal conversation, and I was like, we can't.
Huh.
We still have to overcome some hurdles business-wise. And so we're all working on the things with the checklist to get everything done. And it takes a long time, man. It's too bad. You know, it's in the real world, you can't just do things. Most people learn that these business people think it's like, well, I know how to make a business work. They get into government and then all of a sudden everything sludges up. They don't realize that once you get government involved, it's just like, I could theoretically be like, come on down, and then we'd be shut down in 2 seconds. So, fortunately. All right, where are we at? Philip Snow says, love the show. Did anyone else see the vaccine concert sponsored by YouTube last week? Talk about serious propaganda. The whole thing was about getting people vaccinated. Even Biden and Kamala were part of it. It's the craziest thing to me because it's weird that you've got everyone advocating for a medication when people should be advised to go and talk to their medical professionals, their doctors. When Donald Trump talked about hydroxychloroquine, they were screaming at the top of their lungs, like, he's going to get people hurt. Don't do this. The same thing is true for any medication. All of a sudden, they flipped their tune. It's like, oh, now it's fine. Now just ignore. No. You go to your doctor. You ask your doctor what's up, because I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, stop treating the politicians, the political class, right, as your high priest.
Scarier, is that four? Says, good on you for having Recoil on. Met two of their guys at a training course. Cool dudes. Get knowledge and skills. You bet.
Thanks.
P-Dog says, if you want a depiction of life without electricity, read the Going Home series by A. American. Really makes you think about how people would act. Also, Michael Knowles' book, Speechless, is available for pre-order on Amazon.
Oh. Ding!
That dude is going to sell so many books. Yeah, ding.
Speechless.
They just put it in at the end, and then I have to read it.
I love it so much.
Doc Locke says, $1,500 pew-pew device voucher. Take it to the pew-pew store for your pew-pew of choice. Yearly 500-round box of ammo for training and supply. Biannual mandatory pew-pew training. National defense budget. I just agree with.
Don't ever put the state in charge of training.
Yeah, exactly. When you go to the DMV, maybe if you're going to get a gun from the government, you've got to do a general firing test, like
a driving test.
Exactly. Like you walk up and you have your handgun and you have your AR and they do like some basic range or whatever, some low range, 7 yards and what, maybe like 21 for the rifle, and then they test you, and if you are good enough, they're like, you pass. Have a nice day.
So you'll have to load the gun. They'll watch you load it. Just make sure you know how. You'll have to turn the safety off. Make sure you know how. And then you'll have to hit the target. Yeah. Make sure you know how.
I mean, that's all. They already make you do that in Minnesota for concealed carry or a permit to carry.
So you go to the DGS, and instead of like a driving test, you fill out a little piece of paper, and they call you into the range, and then you do a function test, fire, and then.
So there'd be immediate failures, like a rolling stop. If you don't stop completely at a stop sign, that's an automatic failure.
But you can take the test again.
Yeah.
So then you're like, okay. So it'd be pretty easy to do.
Yeah, I mean, it does sound like a good idea so long as it's mandatory that the state give out firearms. But
right.
Or proof of purchase, proving it over there. I just don't want the state telling me what I can and cannot do when the state can't figure out, everything else.
I think if they're going to give you something, mm-hmm. a test isn't a big deal because you always have the choice to go buy one your own.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So if it's like you want your free gun from the government, you go to, there's a range there, you got to,
What's the test to get on welfare?
You have to go to the Department of Health and Human Services, and then they ask you a series of questions
that you can lie about.
Well, I mean, you can lie about a lot, whatever you want. I mean, if you want to break the law, you can break the law. So
sure, yeah.
But if it's like, if you're going to be getting free stuff,
I'm just saying piracy is in fashion.
Yeah. All right, let's see. Justin Heasley says, Tim and Forrest, why is the requirement of a firearm training class not necessarily supported by pro-2A personalities?
Yeah, I can answer that one. It's because we don't want the state to tell us what is the requirement. Like, so if you're going to come and take a class, or if you're going to go get your concealed carry, like, absolutely, that's the bare minimum. So, but you should be pursuing becoming better at something. You should be pursuing taking other classes.
Requires,
but I do not because who determines what the test is?
Yeah,
sure. In order to get a gun, you have to sit through 8 hours of critical race theory.
Yep. Or I think it's reasonable that people have a training course, that they pass a training course in order to get a firearm. Don't you agree? And they say, yes, okay, now to pass the course, we're going to give you a 9mm, we're gonna give you a Glock, and you got to hit the center of the target at 100 yards.
I can't do that.
You right get
now
one round.
Yeah, I can't do that right now. I mean, I can.
So it's like, okay, like, well, if you can't do it, you shouldn't have a gun.
Yeah, like, it can be used as a prohibition, right? So a common thing that's said in the that's used in a kind of a trendy conversation that people say right now is like, oh, well, the history of gun control is rooted in racism. I think this is a bad argument. I get the point, but I think it's a bad argument because the origins of the American version of gun control was originally intended to target certain ethnic minorities. The problem wasn't only that it was targeting ethnic minorities, but it actually was also disarming a population. The problem is the disarmament. So the application of one group of people making up a list of rules that you have to meet in order to be like them is wrong. It is fundamentally tyranny to support gun control.
All right. We got Andrew J. Gregory says, Tim, saw your blog where you guys were playing music. I'm from MD and would love to jam with you guys. I've played drums on and off since I was 16, 30-year-old now. Send us an email. All right, we'll just do a couple more. Let's see. Jonathan Duger says, did time in KAF. If Minneapolis is anything like that, leaving is a good choice. Army leads the way.
Thank you.
Hotdog 400 says, Tim, you bring up a good point. Get rid of police, bring back local militia. I'm pretty sure the left would agree with that because, well, they probably would because they're lying. But one of the arguments is that community policing. You have cops from outside towns and areas coming in enforcing the law and not caring about the community. And it's like, okay, local militia.
Yeah. Right. Don't make the Marxist mistake of an argument of a good assessment of the problem means that you're going to have an excellent solution.
Hmm. All right. One more. Aaron says, raising Emden geese and guinea fowl. Is that what that GN is?
Guinea. Yeah, it's guinea.
If everything turns out right, we have entertainment in our backyards. If there is a spike in food prices, we have a self-perpetuating fortune in our backyards. There you go.
They're also alarm dogs.
Yeah.
Loud.
Guinea hens?
Yeah.
They're not very intelligent.
No. The chickens, man. Wow. It's hilarious watching these things. They love music.
I've seen it.
Yeah, yeah. You were singing them?
Yeah. They came over and sat down one by one and then just chilled in front of me and watched.
I've watched when I was a kid, we had a dog, and our dog actually called the guinea hens from the neighbor's farm into our property and then ate them.
Whoa.
What? Oh my gosh.
Across the highway. Yeah.
Wow.
It would sit there. It was the weirdest thing.
Called them?
It would sit way out in the field and it'd make noise. You could see it barking and making this noise. And then you'd see the skinny hen walk across and
what the heck?
It just well, like, that anyway, dog was really, really smart.
That's weird.
After Ian said that, I went out with the guitar and I jammed, and Vanessa walked over and sat down and just like hung out and watched me jam.
Yeah, she's going to have a character arc.
Yeah.
I like Vanessa.
So I was wrong. She's not mean.
Vanessa's a chicken.
Yes, Vanessa's chicken. I said the other day that she was like being mean. No, I was incorrect.
What's she doing?
No, she was just. I think I mistook her demands for food to be bullying.
Oh.
So when she would come up and follow me around and stuff, I thought she was like getting ready to. Turns out she just wanted more stink bugs.
All right. Yeah. Vanessa.
And then, you know, she's very nice.
Vanessa.
We hung out, petted her.
Lead the way.
My friends, if you have not already, make sure you smash the like button. And you can follow this show on Facebook, facebook.com/TimcastIRL, where we will leverage the network to, if you could share the videos, get more people to go over to TimCast.com. So it's greatly appreciated. We're also on Instagram at TimCastIRL. This show is live Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. So, of course, we're back tomorrow. And did you want to shout anything out for us? Social media?
So, like I said, my personal social media is FoxrowOfficial with an underscore in there. It's really annoying, but it's a pretty casual page. But the bigger thing and the more important thing is follow Recoil Magazine on Instagram. And then if you actually want to, best way to get our magazine is actually to subscribe. You can subscribe to it. It's cheaper. It gets delivered to your door. It's discreet. And so, but check out our website, recoilweb.com and offgridweb.com.
Nice. And I'm Ian Crossland. You can follow me at iancrossland.net and along social media at Ian Crossland. So thanks for coming.
Cool. Yeah. I'm always glad to have an expert in his field on the show with us. And I thank you guys very much for supporting us as Crowder's going through this. This does concern me a lot. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Sour Patch Lids in my quest to have more followers than Sour Patch Kids.
Go over to timcast.com, click the members only button, sign up now. Because at around 11, we're going to have an exclusive members only segment up with Forrest from Recoil Magazine. So thanks for hanging out and we will see you all there.
Bye guys.